Tonight on The Download, from the new film Brigsby Bear, SNL cast member Kyle Mooney. Touché with Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling. And live in Studio 435, hip-hop artist Kwaku Collin. Now, here's your host, a man who is sunburned in all the wrong places, Justin Kaufman.
It's true. Like, right, like, just one little blotch by the armpit. Real strong look. Also, because I wore my sunglasses, I now have streaks all over my face. It's a great look. It's a Monday. Welcome to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. I had a great day today. I was in Lake Geneva. I went to on a boat with my parents and my brother. My brother was back from California for the weekend because he's a huge Cubs fan, he and his wife. And they went to the series up in Milwaukee. And so I got a chance with my son. We went up there to get a chance to see them because he lives in California. So it was a really fun day today. And I got to listen to all of 720 all the way up there and all the way back. There were punctuations of the top 40 playlist that my son put together. Real strong stuff. A lot of Bieber in there. But I learned a lot today about how to drive a pontoon boat. That's my takeaway. Yeah. My brother's wife, Jill, she was really great at it. She had experience, and she was really good at adjusting the boat when the wake was coming. When another speedboat would go by, and she would hit the waves with authority and efficiency. Slow, fast, move, no problems whatsoever.
So a certain skill is required for a pontoon boat.
Or not. That was my point. After we were coming in, I'm like, or she probably could have just gone over those and it wouldn't have made a difference whatsoever. But I'm sure the people text in now saying, no, there's an art to the pontoon. She was great. I give her kudos today for that. But yes, I did the spray tan or the spray sunscreen, which was a mistake. I have like blotches. I have weird blotches of sunburn, like right below my knee for just a spot underneath the arm and the armpit. So really, it's a really great look. Anyway, had fun. That was a fun day today. But excited to get back at work today. Excited for the new week. We got a great show tonight. Kyle Mooney from SNL is here. We're going to talk with him about his new movie, Brigsby Bear, which comes out in theaters this weekend. It's awesome. Mark Hamill's in it. Greg Kinnear's in it. How fun is that? Mark Hamill, not being Luke Skywalker. Finally, we'll take it. Kyle Mooney, I love everything he does on Saturday Night Live. He's been one of the more he's the bright spot / awkward spot for that show. They always have to throw him in to be the CNN guy, and it doesn't always work when he's being a player where he's just like playing he's playing the John Sununu role or whatever it is. But when you get late, usually late in the game, late 11:45 sketch where it's a video or a film that he's doing, where he rap battles Kanye West or he's married to Leslie Jones, that's good stuff. So we'll talk with Kyle Mooney coming up tonight about his new movie. Also, of course, Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy will be here right after the 7:30 news to talk about what a crazy day in Washington. It just continues. It starts this morning with the ousting of Anthony Scaramucci, and it ends tonight. Another story, the Washington Post is saying that the president personally dictated his son, Donald Trump Jr.'s response to the Russian meeting with the lawyer, which the president up to this point said, I knew nothing about it. My son's so transparent. Good. The idea that he wrote it for his son and then responded on Twitter being like, what a great response. What a great transparent response. What a great spontaneous transparent response. Come on, man. Also coming up tonight, 9 o'clock hour, Sam Panionovich join us. We'll talk about the trades that happened at the deadline for both the Cubs and the White Sox. Also, then our Lollapalooza week kicks off. Lollapalooza is coming up this weekend. Studio 435 tonight. Kwaku Collins, live in studios, playing Lollapalooza, young hip-hop artist here in Chicago. We had him on a show a year ago. He is going to be playing in Lollapalooza, and before he goes to Lollapalooza, he is live in Studio 435 tonight. How great is that? Amazing. I love it. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martire, Esmeralda Leon, production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We will come back, and we will give you the carryout, so stay with us. All right, it's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's start with the carryout. Here are today's top stories. The Washington Post is reporting tonight that President Trump personally dictated his son's response to the meeting with the Russian lawyer. More to come on this, but I thought he didn't know anything about it, huh? And is that obstruction of justice? Again, I really don't know. We'll find out with we'll let Roebling and Lundy argue that. Let's go live right now to the White House press corps. Nobody works there. The mooch is loose. Anthony Scaramucci has been relieved of his duty after 10 days on the job as White House communications director, although some inside anonymous sources say he's been on the job for 11 days. Leakers. The New York Times is reporting that this was at the behest of new White House chief of staff John Kelly, who is not former Chicago sports anchor John Kelly, by the way. The different guy. I made that mistake, too. I was like, awesome, yeah. He would be a good chief of staff. No, he's a general. And apparently, he didn't like Mooch's candor and, well, his 11-day screw-ups. So if you're counting at home, that's Priebus on Friday, Mooch today. Add that to Spicer, Comey, Flynn, and the rest of the discarded. And you have yourself season one of The Political Apprentice, right? But I will say that if I've watched enough of The Apprentice to know that Donald would probably ask, who's hiring all these guys? I mean, maybe it's the manager. Get the manager in here. And then what would happen is they do 2 hours of Trump talking to himself in a mirror. We laugh, but you know that's what's going to happen. All right, so what's next? Kelly hopes to come in, get things in order before the Trump administration moves on to tax reform, something that hasn't been done in 30 years. You know the saying, go big or go home. Let's make that literal. Go big or go home. Speaking of big homes, Governor Rauner has the school formula bill, and as promised, he's using his mandatory veto power to cut out the CPS pension part, which would deliver millions to help cover pension obligations for Chicago public schools. What's it mean? Well, it means that if the House can't muster up the votes, which is unlikely, then this bill dies. And yep, there's going to be no funding bill in place on August 1st. So if that... It doesn't work that the gov would just use his pen to take one thing out and we would have school funding. No, the House and Senate would have to go back to the drawing board and put together a new bill before August 10th. That's 10 days. Really? Am I the only one that's watched how the state house has worked over the last 4 years? 10 days. So if I were you, I'd go to the store right now and get all the school supplies because you'll probably be able to put them on eBay and be like, remember when we sent our kids to school? And they use these things called protractors? Well, I've got three of them. $7,000 are best offer. Hip, hip, hooray for Los Angeles. They're getting the 2028 Summer Olympics. You know, those international games that usually sink the local economy and cause all sorts of headaches for anyone who lives close by. Hey, better L.A. than us, right? Although I would have loved to have had the Olympics in Chicago. I'd be Airbnb in my place so fast. I'd spend a month living in the office. I mean, hey, I've got pretzels. 17 party bus companies are forced to shut down by Chicago police after violating several laws, which begs the question, how many party bus companies are there in Chicago? Are there only 20 and the other three are like goody-goody? No standing, sit down. Nope, Missy, is that alcohol? A Spirit Airlines flight in Las Vegas was delayed because a passenger got naked before takeoff. See, this is why I wear long pants and long shirts on a plane. You know they didn't wipe anything down after that sweaty dude put his junk on everything. Gross. Not the naked guy, but Spirit. But same thing. And weather, it's like July's trying to make up for the flooding by bringing the best day right at the deadline, right? So we look back and go, you know, July was pretty good. What a month. It was a pretty good month. Although the Earth is supposed to go up 2 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. But you know what? No one knows what Celsius means. So, I mean... if you're going to do climate change, speak English, right? In sports, well, the Cubs made some moves on the final day to bolster the team for the stretch run. Alex Avila and Justin Wilson come over for the Tigers for John Candelaria. Oh, wait, sorry. I read that wrong. Jameer Candelario. Sorry, I thought it was the old fat pitcher from the Pirates in the 70s. I was like, that guy's in our farm system? Bring him up. Now he's on the Tigers? Big loss. Avila was on the Sox last year. He became the first player in, I think, in Major League Baseball history to be traded by his dad. His dad is the GM of the Tigers. That's some serious cutthroat Little League business there. Also, the Cubs get Justin Wilson, who's the closer for the Tigers, which totally screws me over since I had Wilson on my fantasy team. And you know Joe Madden's only going to use him in weird, non-fantasy sports-related appearances. Fine. I'll drop him. Maybe I'll pick up the new Tigers closer, who's probably the old Tigers closer. Yeah. That's usually how it works. The Cubs are now 2.5 games up like we all knew they'd be, right? Right? Come on. We told you this was going to happen. Every sports station in Chicago right now is going, we told you from the beginning. This is the best team in baseball. Well, what about that weird thing they did right before the All-Star game? Nobody panicked. Nobody. Right. The Sox fed the prospect monster over the weekend. Yum, 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 yum. Although not a very satisfying meal, Melky Cabrera was shipped to the Royals for cash and a couple of A-ball pitchers. Hey, I guess we have to start thinking of the future of our middle relievers too, right? They tried to ship Derek Holland and Tyler Clippard too, but no bites. What? I mean, Clippard has those cool shades and everything. Nobody wanted the cool shades pitcher? It's ridiculous. The Bears are back in camp today for day 5, a little lighter than they were on Saturday. Offseason acquisition wideout Marcus Wheaton had an appendectomy. Yep, out indefinitely with an appendectomy. If you're counting already this camp, McPhee and Wheaton down, no timetable for return on either. Come on. But hopefully appendectomy is one of those things that if you or I had it, we'd be out for like 3.5 years. But if a football player gets it, it's like a week and a half, right? Questionable. Doesn't even go to like... He's doubtful. He's questionable. He's upgraded to questionable. Mike Glennon looked good so far, but the star of the early camp has to be the secondary, which is picking off balls left and right. Of course, the Bears revamped the secondary in the offseason after the lowest turnover rate in the league. They had 8 interceptions. To give context, that's like one day for me in flag football. One day, I'm a ball hawk. I'm like the white-bearded, bald Troy Polamalu. Trubisky looks like a rookie, and everybody else loves Tariq Cohen, the rookie running back, who's lightning fast. If he can catch the ball, have him run back punts and kicks, right? Please don't go with the guy who's sure-handed, who's good at fair catching. Like, we've had that for the last 5 years. I got it. Good catch. Good catch, Joe. Good catch. No, it's a catch and run. I got it. I'm not going to fumble the ball. Coach said, don't fumble the ball. I'm not going to fumble the ball. Right? We tried that already. It's boring. Nobody wants that. All right. And finally tonight, the Cubs announced that they are giving a World Series ring to Steve Bartman. Bartman, of course, the infamous fan who got in the way of an uncatchable foul ball. And then since we couldn't handle it, our actual baseball team choked. We blamed it on him. Remember that? That's the Steve Bartman we're talking about, right? He gets a ring? Right. When do I get mine? Ugh. That's the carryout for July 31st, 2017. Good month, everybody. We had a strong month. Good month. Hey, we're going green for the carryout. If you come in and order something, we're skipping the styrofoam. Just bring in your Trader Joe's bag, and we'll dump the fries right in there. All right, coming up, Touche. This is a big one tonight. Lots to talk about. Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy already in the green room. Got their boxing gloves on. It's going to be a big jam tonight. Talking national politics here on the Download 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Oh, man, I'm so good. I spent all morning putting together a patio set. It was fantastic.
Oh, what?
Yeah, nothing like blazing hot sun on a cement patio using a tiny little screwdriver and wrench.
An Allen wrench.
Yeah.
Does it look good, though?
It does, yeah. Say goodbye to Martha Stewart and hello, Backyard Creations.
Nice.
Yeah. A little high top, got 6 chairs. Very excited, yeah.
Are the chairs high top? Are they like a stool kind of thing?
Well, it looked kind of silly with our chins leaning on the table. We had to get the appropriate chairs.
That's good. I should have We should have connected because my wife is yelling at me because there's some really old patio furniture upstairs, and I always say, I don't want to get rid. She's like, just throw it out. I'm like, I don't want. It might come in useful someday.
Yeah.
Like I just can't get rid of like the sun weathered green plastic chairs that are they're stacked up against the.
It's tough, man.
AC unit. Yeah.
Had a lot of beers in those chairs.
So I could have given you those. You could have got those. Those would have been strong for you.
Yeah, Mrs. Rob would have been thrilled.
Look what I got.
Hey.
We don't need to get this new set.
Justin was getting rid of these. All I had to do was pick them up.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touché.
You go right, you go right, you go left, you go right, you go right, you go right, you go left.
Ooh, extended. Touché. Dave Lundy expanded.
The old expanded news.
Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy in studio for Touché tonight.
Hello.
Wow, man, they got the gloves
Happy
on
Monday.
Tonight. What
I
a Monday.
I just want to say I flew in 7,000 miles for this appearance.
There was a point I messed up on the calendar, and I think I even said after last week, I'm like, Chris is out for a couple weeks. And then you're like, I think the real story is you turned the private jet around. And you're like, there's too much news. I need to get on 720
I called the
right
client
now.
And said, hey, where's the G650?
Yeah, once he learned that the mooch was out, Chris was like, oh, I got to go. I can't miss this Touché.
Allow me to plug. Marge and I will be on tomorrow morning, 6:30,
of course.
Channel 9.
Man, that's
Tune in.
That's synergy. That's a company
two
synergy.
Doses of Roebling within 14 hours.
Yeesh.
All right, so let's talk about this.
I think there's an antibiotic for
emergency
that.
Room.
I don't even know where to start. I mean, I would have started on Friday with Rance Priebus out as chief of staff. Seemed to be a win, if you would, for Scaramucci. And then
Scaramucci.
And then I guess it backfired in the way that today the news that he is out as communications director at the White House. So what does this mean, Dave Lundy?
So quick. Such a quick flip. Well, first of all, it means that comedians around the nation are in deep mourning tonight. There was a simultaneous primal scream when this news broke of,
yeah.
No! But because the mooch was the gift that just was going to keep on giving. So I'm of two minds. On the one hand, on behalf of our nation, our dignity, I think this is fantastic. The mooch should be out. He never should have been in that job. He was Donald Trump's id. He encouraged Trump. Trump tweeted 15 separate tweets on Saturday morning. 15. That was a new Trump record for tweeting. And it was because the mooch was encouraging Trump to be Trump. So he wasn't helping anything. He wasn't helping himself. It was a disaster. On the other hand, he was such good material.
Chris, what do you think of this? I mean, is this a sign that maybe the Trump administration is righting the ship, going with General Kelly instead of Priebus? And essentially, like Dave said, saying, you know, let's bring some decorum, some dignity back. Let's get rid of some of the people that don't have experience in these roles.
Self-correcting behavior. It's important. And you got to say Trump has been a very significant cause of the problems. He's created problems out of nothing, and he's made problems caused by others bigger than they were. But you got to give him some credit here, because somebody sat down and looked at 6 months and said, 6 months are not that great. And number two, last week was a nadir. I mean, I think
which
you
is hard
get
to believe.
To,
I mean, it's hard to believe that it could get worse than it has been. But last week was not good.
Buchanan takes a pretty bad rap. I know there's an effort to rehabilitate President Buchanan, but you can get back.
I was
going to
say
that.
Pat Buchanan takes a bad rap. What? Oh, no. James Buchanan.
Right,
sorry,
right before Lincoln. But yeah. You're back into the period of the Millard Fillmore era to find stuff where just there was so little control of what was going on in the White House. A very scary moment.
Now, I'll say it to you, Chris, because we've talked about this, and I've found myself in conversations over the weekend kind of playing devil's advocate in the way that President Trump, here's my devil's advocate, he compromised to bring in a lot of the Republican establishment, whether it was Priebus or whether it was Sessions even to an extent or any of the other, Sean Spicer. And these are not the people that he necessarily wanted in the first place to be part of a new Trump administration that promised to drain the swamp. 6 months in, he recognizes, he says, I don't like these guys. Get them out of here.
You got three things in the White House. You have program, a process, and a schedule. Those are the tools in the hands of the chief of staff. I've said on this program that Reince was in way over his head, and I think for 2 or 3 months I've been saying he should go. I posted a thing a few days ago about how Scaramucci, even at that point, had had 23 firing offenses already. I'm delighted to see him go. But you got to say that this White House was distinguished because in taking in all of these, we'll say RNC people, because Reince Priebus was the head of the RNC. Sean Spicer was at RNC. There were a lot of other people. There were a lot of people who were brought in on the 20th of January who were not with the program. They were not with the Trump program.
You can even say that about the FBI director as well.
And right. and they started leaking. And I many, many others, many of us now, have seen these articles down through the months. I'm absolutely shocked that a guy who had such intense support in a group of people out there had folks working in the White House who were obviously absolutely ready to go and leak on the guy and to run him down and to attack internally.
So speaking of leaks, one of the so the problem is that Trump is Trump. And a story broke tonight in The Washington Post that I just want to spend 1 second on. Okay, maybe a minute. And the story was, remember that when the email, when the scandal broke about Donald Trump Jr. had met with this Russian person, et cetera, yeah. And the first statement that came out was so wildly misleading.
It was about adoption, nothing came out of this.
And it was intended to be a misleading statement.
And over weeks, it's been picked apart and saying, well, you said it was about this. Like, there's been a lot of
pressure. Yeah, there were like three different versions of it within 48 hours.
Right.
Because the first statement was so wildly off the mark. It was so deceptive. Well, it turns out, according to a report in the Washington Post tonight, that the story was written, or that the original statement was dictated by Donald J. Trump, the president. And so, and here you have one of the main problems that Trump has, which is his inability to tell the truth. In fact, even today at the cabinet meeting, he talked about how the economy is doing astonishingly well and it's achieving numbers, you know, we haven't seen in years and years and years. It was 2.6%. The last time we saw an economy grow that much was in the third quarter of 2016. So the idea that the economy is on fire is crazy. The economy is doing about what it's been doing, which, as Chris has said many, many, many times, if that's where we are 2 years and 4 years from now, Donald Trump will be out.
Well, he might well be out. I want to say that the real thing about this article, which no one else knows about except the three of us, and David has now told the world.
No, it's already it's scrolling on CNN.
Right. Well, it's very
it's
important.
Trending.
People
trending,
have got to see it. They've got to read it. And I'll tell you, who leaks in Washington? Answer, the guys who are losing the internal battle tend to be the biggest leakers. It's not ideological. It's not age-based, race, sex, gender. What it is folks who feel like they're losing internally say, well, wait a minute. I know a reporter at the New York. I know a reporter at the Miami Herald.
I'm disgruntled in my job.
Usually it's a sincere policy difference. And here, this article, as I read it, says to me, there are folks inside the White House who know that Trump put his hands on this statement and who know also he really had no business doing so. And they're trying to put this story out now so that Kelly and Trump will pay attention and Kelly can have more strength in saying to the president, let us write the first three drafts of this thing. Don't you yourself sit down and dictate it on Air Force One in the suite going back from, you know, and that's and so you could look at it and say these are guys inside who are trying to help, but they've been so frustrated by the situation. This is what they resort
to. But Dave,
to.
I would ask the question about that. I mean, even if you have a strong chief of staff or advisors around the president, this particular president likes to do things his way. You've seen it on Twitter. He's talked about it for months now about this is his channel. He wants to do it. It was his kid involved in this. I don't know how strong a chief of staff has to be to stop the president from doing something that ultimately could have him trip up.
You know, there's so much dysfunction to talk about and so little time. But let's just talk about message. So when Chris and I do media training with our clients and we talk all about staying on message and focusing on message and the need
I never get to that because I'm always on hide. Hide better.
Yes,
keep
I'm
your
sorry.
Mouth shut.
I forgot, Chris.
Never get into these issues ever again.
I forgot, Chris's firm, Duck and Cover Limited. has a different approach to media training. But meanwhile, typically it's, you know, you want to stay on message.
Well,
and in Trump's case, they craft a message, they teach everybody the message, and then they put out the message, and then Donald Trump tweets. And it's destroying whatever the message is. And so, you know, you want to talk about X, you wind up talking about, you know, Y way the heck over here.
Totally undisciplined.
Yeah, totally undisciplined.
Right.
And not just him. And with respect, Chris, the people who leak don't just leak because they're losing the argument. Because who just leaked? Anthony Scaramucci to Ryan Lizza. That was supposed to be a leaked conversation. And yet it wasn't. People in Washington talk to reporters
all the time.
There's kinds of reasons.
There's gleeful leaking, which is, I won this. Let me tell you how smart I was to win it.
Right. Exactly. What do we expect from a General Kelly as chief of staff?
I mean, order. I mean, there is the cardinal sin of Scaramucci was to say, I'm working for the president, not for the chief of staff.
Right.
That was idiotic. The only person traditionally who gets to say that, who doesn't have to say it, is the first lady. I mean, everybody else is always under the watchful eye. And this is a strange White House in so many ways, David said before. But let me just say, you've got two people in there, Jared and Ivanka, who are family members. And, you know, after hours, they're up in the residence having spaghetti and meatballs with the president. And maybe no staffer is there. Maybe the chief of staff isn't there. So Kelly understands that. He knows that. And he's obviously accounted for that in taking the job. But that's it from now on. I mean, everybody else is going to be going right through Kelly, and Kelly is going to impose that process to promote a program using the single most valuable resource, which is the time of the president, i.e. the schedule. Program, process, schedule.
Well, but we'll see how it plays out, because there's another interesting story that broke today was that when Comey was fired, apparently Comey and Kelly are close. And when Comey was fired, Kelly was going to quit. And he called Comey literally on the airplane when he was coming from L.A. back to Washington. And Comey told him, don't quit. You need to be there. You need to be a stabilizing influence. So, you know, how this plays out, it's anybody's guess. But this was not the last crazy day. There will be lots more. And I just think that Kelly gets a lot of oomph early on, but that tends to wane as familiarity breeds contempt.
We have to see. I hear David's point about familiarity and contempt. And Trump is a fascinating individual in that there are some folks who have worked for him for 35 years and they jump off one of his buildings for the guy. I mean, they're so dedicated, so loyal. We haven't seen that in Washington. We haven't seen that in politics. I mean, the most loyal guy in there, I mean, in terms of long time, appears to be Bannon. And some people, like the Democrats and the liberals, think that that's horrible. I think that that's fine. Bannon seems to have gotten through. Bannon was not the guy thrown overboard in this whole thing. So,
but I would say we could be having this conversation a week or two when he gets thrown
overboard. I don't know.
When you start seeing these names pop up in different forms, and his name with Scaramucci and everything, I just have a feeling that the way we've seen this work out in 6 months is you want to keep your name out of the circle.
Let me wrap this by saying, what we have got to do is check in on this, and I know we will, thanks to your program and our ability to chat about this, a weekly basis, and we have got to see, do they get a message across this week? And they've decided to go back to healthcare. Somebody's been talking to somebody. Somebody's got a green light from somebody, and they're talking about health. Where are they going to go? I don't know. Are they going to block grant everything? This is what, you know, Lindsey Graham is now saying. We're going to block grant everything. We're going to send it. Four states get 40% of the money, and that's New York and California and Massachusetts and Maryland. Why are people in South Carolina getting less than the people in Maryland? This is the guy. Okay, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do, but somebody has green-lighted the conversation about this, and we have to see if there are any results put on the board.
But Lindsey Graham voted yes, so he's not part of he's not the problem that prevented the legislation from going forward. The other reality is that, for all intents and purposes, for the near term, I don't think John McCain's going to be back in the Senate while he's undergoing these treatments for some time.
Yeah. He's got to resign.
Well, he's going to come back, he's not going to resign.
I'm with you, but that's not how the Senate works.
The survival rate is awful.
Is zero. Yeah, but this is what my late ex-wife died of. And the survival rate in those days, 18 years ago, was zero. So they've made a lot of progress. In any event, I don't think John McCain is going to resign for the foreseeable future, which means they have 51 votes. So you need to look at a bipartisan approach. There was a group of congressmen, including Adam Kinzinger, who came out today with one approach. You're going to see over the course of the next couple of weeks 10, 15 different approaches to fixing the various problems with Obamacare. And we'll see if any of them
get
traction.
Let me ask you, I have to, the Rasmussen poll comes out today. It's not good for Trump. It's dropped yeah. again, and that's one that's usually favorable for him.
Right.
The healthcare debate didn't do favors for the president. People seem to put it at his doorstep in the form. Is it, and now there's talk about tax reform, the idea that that's the next big thing he wants to do, and whether or not you may see that. I was listening to Roe today, and they were talking about that seems to be on their agenda as well, to do a campaign style, rally style around the country about tax reform. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there political will for him to try and change a system that's been in place for 30 years? It probably should be changed. But is there political will to do that when you just came off of losing that fight in the healthcare? If he loses on tax reform, if it falls apart, where do you go?
Well, it depends who wins the fight internally, because there were stories last week that said that the aforementioned Bannon was proposing a top tax rate of 44% in order to enable a middle class tax cut. That I cannot imagine in a million years Paul Ryan will go for that.
Yeah.
The Paul Ryan and his faction in Congress have been trying to cut the top rate of taxes to satisfy their base for decades. The odds of them agreeing to raise top taxes, I think, is pretty close to zero, whether Trump is on board or not. So first thing they have to do is get beyond a one-pager and get to a plan. And until we see the plan, we won't have any clue whether they have a prayer or not.
Is he going
to
do the rallies and the campaign-style rallies off the one-pager?
Probably.
But off of what? Because the one-pager is completely inconsistent with what Steve Bannon is saying.
Well, I mean, Steve Bannon doesn't speak for the president. Steve Bannon speaks for Steve Bannon. So, you know, there are a lot of ideas floating around, some good, some bad. Some are going to work, some aren't. But it's very important at this point, not just because of Kelly coming in and Kelly needing a win, to, you know, a scalp on the wall, so to speak.
Sure.
You look right now. I mean, this presidency is at a truly crucial moment, and they have to pick a winner. They've got to pick something that is going to come home and be celebrated. And that's why this whole talk about healthcare is very interesting to
healthcare,
me.
Healthcare, infrastructure, spending. I mean, I just feel like there's a lot of other things except 30-year tax reform.
There are wins to be had.
I will say this. Here again, you know, I've been very critical of the Republicans. Ryan has done a terrible job on this. Ryan has done a terrible job on tax reform. And he didn't get started early enough. And he didn't push them hard enough. And there hasn't been the kind of encyclopedic and comprehensive set of hearings and proposals, straw people, trial balloons, different ideas thrown out there, op-eds in the Washington, et cetera, the whole process. And why is that important? Because it's only that way that you can really begin to see that a guy like Ryan can begin to see. And this is what Tip O'Neill used to do. He saw, where is the support? What's going to cross the finish line? And what you did with healthcare by not having the whole hearing process and not going through the legislative drafting process, you end up with an idea with six guys in a back room come out and say, here's our healthcare plan.
Yeah.
And where's the constituency for that apart from the six guys in the back
room? Let me ask you a
room?
Question, though, Dave. I want to just, because we only have about 3 minutes left here. The Democrats, the Democratic Party and all of this. Right. Exactly. That's where I'm going with this. They somehow took the blame from Republicans and Trump for their health care plan not working.
We gave it to them.
Yeah, right. But at the same regard, I mean, they still on the Democratic side, the big name and on that side is Hillary Clinton. I mean, the Republicans have done a great job of keeping her in the news, even though she's not the de facto leader of that
party.
Well,
Donald Trump's still obsessed with the election.
What do you do if you're in the Democratic side right now? This seems to be a golden opportunity to step up and lead this country and be in a position that would do well for 2018.
Well, let me answer that question, but first I have to point out Christopher over here is right about one thing in talking about Paul Ryan, but part of what you're saying, without saying it, is that Paul Ryan is a lousy Speaker of the House. He's been woefully ineffective.
I think they're both ineffective.
And I think that Paul Ryan has done as well as he has because Trump has been the big shiny thing to look at. Nobody's noticed that he's just quietly failed.
All right, Democrats.
But let me ask you about the Democrats. So I have to say, my party, the Democratic Party, when they came out with a better idea or a better deal, as the new slogan to take us forward, I'm sitting there going like, oh my God, nothing speaks about the future like a couple of septuagenarians hearkening back 90 years to Franklin Roosevelt. Give me a break. Our party needs new leadership. I've said this before. I will say it again. Hillary, I don't want to see her book. I don't want to read her book. I don't want to see her on the talk shows. I worked my butt off for her.
You lied for her.
Please. I worked my butt off for her and would have been delighted had she been president, even though we would have been going through 27 impeachment hearings by now. But all that generation, they need to just go away. Bernie Sanders,
away.
All of them.
Yeah.
We need new leadership. There are leaders out there.
Democratic problem, and this will sound like a cheap shot, but there's a lot more to it than the cheap shot. And here it is. We've got this guy in Oregon who broke into this house and rapes this 65-year-old woman after he has been, and he lives in a sanctuary city, Portland, and he has been deported by Barack Obama's Justice Department and INS 20 times, okay? Maybe once or twice by Trump, but 18 or 19 times by Obama. So at least Obama was trying. But this story...
I'm still looking for the topic that Justin asked
this
about
story,
here.
Well, the Democrats will keep failing as long as they find a way to be so far out of the mainstream that they are supportive of sanctuary cities and they cannot wrap their... hands
yeah,
around any success relative to defending our borders. I mean, the Democrats are intent on destroying themselves. And I regret that as a kid who grew up as a Democrat.
It sounds to me that I, from this conversation tonight, that both parties are intent on destroying themselves. That's all.
Oh, yeah, we're
talked
doomed,
about.
Man.
We're doomed. Republicans
doomed.
Or Democrats. Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling in studio tonight. Touche every Monday night here on The Download. Guys, thanks for
next week
here.
We'll be happier.
Rob, maybe you can invite Chris and Dave over to the new backyard patio jam.
It's easy living back there, man.
Yeah, and they could just stay and sit there and call each other names. Really, they're very intelligent, intellectual names, but they are names nonetheless.
The two of them together. You know, I think they would both be very relaxed on the new Menards patio furniture set.
Yeah, why don't we do a remote out there,
sure.
A live show. We'll bring all the regulars out.
Done.
There you go.
Done. From Rob's backyard.
And you could be the guy. We'll get somebody else to do the news so you can make sure that nobody's scuffing up your new stuff. put a coaster, please.
You know, I was so disappointed. It's funny that you say that because I had that goofy little Allen wrench, you know. So I'm going around and around and my fingers are hurting. And then I just a little tiny itty bitty microscopic scratch. And I just went, oh. I mean, the sweat's just pouring off me. You know, it's in my glasses, it's in my eyes, and I'm like, I can't believe I did that. I'm so upset.
So upset. You took a 2-hour break.
You'd like touch-up paint now or something, some Rust-Oleum.
That's what you need, right? All right. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN, Chicago, WGNradio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say, play WGN Radio. All right, coming up here, we're going to talk with Kyle Mooney and Dave McCary, both from SNL. Dave, the director, Kyle, the writer and star of the new movie Brigsby Bear, which is out in theaters in Chicago this week. I think it opened up last weekend around the country, and this week it comes to Chicago. I think it's going to be at the Landmark coming up on Friday or Saturday. But a comedy starring Kyle Mooney and Beck Bennett's in it from Saturday Night Live. Also, like I said, Mark Hamill from Star Wars fame, Greg Kinnear from Another movie fame.
As good as it gets.
As good as it gets fame. Thank you, buddy. That's fine. They're good Greg Kinnear movies. I just could. They escaped me. Matt Walsh from Veep fame is in it. So a lot of good people in this movie that's coming up. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up tonight in the 9 o'clock hour, Sammy Panayanovich is going to join us to talk about the White Sox and the Cubs and what they did at the trade deadline. We know, of course, that Alex Avila and Justin Wilson are coming over to help the Cubs out. And we know that Melky Cabrera is out, traded to the Royals. But what did we give up? What did we get in return? We'll talk what we also might see with the waiver wire. I always get confused with baseball because they say trade deadline. They get all crazy about it. Then they have a waiver wire after the fact that you'll see a bunch of players still continue to be moved after the deadline. What's that? It's like Springfield runs MLB. It's like, no one cares about deadlines anymore. Why couldn't they have cared about? No, I wish this was the attitude when I was in high school. So I feel like every third Thursday, they're like, hey, that's due, and there is no exception. That's it. That's an F. You didn't get it in time. Yeah, but Mike Madigan. Yeah, but they traded after the deadline in Major League Baseball. All right. We'll talk with Sam. Also coming up, we start our Lollapalooza week. Lollapalooza will be here before we know it, starting on Friday. Is it Thursday or Friday? I think it's Thursday. They had tons of great bands and musicians and artists that are coming through. It's a huge, of course, event, not just for Chicago, but for the entire country. Chance the Rapper is going to be headlining on Saturday. We're going to be showcasing bands and other artists that are going to be at the festival this week on the download. Tonight we start first with an indie rock band from Pennsylvania called The Districts. Braden Lawrence will be here. We'll talk to them about, they're getting so much buzz about a new album coming out. Which I think it comes out right after the festival. They've been touring on it. But we'll talk to them because they are blowing up coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And then live in studio tonight in Studio 435, Kwaku Collins, hip-hop artist from Chicago, who will be playing at Lollapalooza. Before he plays Lollapalooza, he's here in Studio 435. We'll take that, right? Gots to. All right. Well, my next guests are two of the creative forces behind Brigsby Bear, a film that hit Chicago theaters this weekend, and from my humble opinion, the breakout hit of the summer.
They sure came out tonight, huh? So what's on your mind, pal?
It's just, there are other people out there, just like us, right? And we're all watching Brigsby together. It means something.
Look at the grazer bugs, James. All they need in this world is fresh water and cold moonlight to charge their rectoskeletons. They're out there every night, surviving just like us. The difference is we have dreams and imaginations to help us escape. But no one can take that away from you.
The movie stars SNL cast member Kyle Mooney as a 20-something-year-old man-child who was kidnapped as a baby and has lived in a bunker his entire life. Once rescued and reunited with his real family, James has to learn the ways of the outside world, and he does with the help of his favorite kids' television show, Brigsby Bear. The one problem? Brigsby Bear is not real. It's a show that was fabricated by the family who kidnapped him. The film is funny. It's thoughtful. It's heartwarming. It tells a story of family, connection, and, well, a bear that's destined to save the galaxy. The movie stars Mooney and a list of greats like Mark Hamill, Greg Kinnear, Matt Walsh, and Claire Danes. It's produced by Lonely Island and directed by Dave McCary. McCary and Mooney both hail from the same sketch group Good Neighbor, and Dave is currently a segment director on Saturday Night Live, where Kyle is a cast member. Dave McCary and Kyle Mooney are my guests tonight at the big table. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be at the big table.
So Brigsby Bear, where's it come from? I mean, is this a character that you guys have, this concept that something's worked out of sketch, or is this a new original idea for a script?
Well, it's original. I mean, like, it's not new in the sense that I feel like we've been thinking about it now for 5-ish, 6 years or something like that. But it just – it came partially from kind of our love and my love for 80s and 90s children's television shows, the stuff we grew up on. And then also I was just kind of fascinated with this idea of this kid who's obsessed with this TV show that nobody else has ever seen.
It's a tremendous, tremendous script. I really love the script, the idea. It's original. You know, for both of you guys to be childhood friends and to be in the same sketch group, work on SNL, and then be able to work on this movie together, does that help the process of getting Brigsby Bear to the big screen?
Well, I think it helped the process in of people being willing to take the risk on me, because it's hard to throw a lot of money at a first-time director and a first-time lead. But I think, we put together a cool package with The Lonely Island, who produced, and Lord and Miller also. They did the Lego movies and Jump Street movies. And I mean, it's easier to, in terms of speed and like getting through scenes, we have such a great shorthand, just all these childhood references that we can access, you know, whether a direction or a joke or sensibilities, yeah, right, just so quickly.
Yeah, we've now hung out so long and been around each other so much. I feel like the parallel I'm now kind of, I guess, comparing it to, it's almost like twin speak or something like that. You know what I mean? We have our own language, and we enjoy each other's company, but sometimes we don't. But we still are going to try to make the best movie we can. Well, okay, Dave?
It's already done. You don't have to tell me how. Yeah, we're fine.
Getting back to the familiarity, when you're working together as a lead and a first-time director, and you're in a position where there's a script and you're on set, how much of it sticks to what is on the script, and how much of it is that you guys trust each other to say, let's go in different directions when putting Brigsby Bear together?
In the past, it was we're super loose, and we like to find things both on set and in the edit, and we like to improvise a lot. But we felt really confident with the script, and I think we spent a lot of time, and Kyle and Kevin are the other co-writer who we grew up with as well. We spent, you know, months and months of after the first finished draft of getting it to a place where we felt so comfortable with how every scene was supposed to play out. So we didn't, and we just don't, with, you know, low budget independent films, you don't have the luxury of time to explore scenes further, yeah, right, through improv. So, yeah, I would say that was.
I mean, yeah, there it was still there. I mean, like you. You just have to naturally be adaptive, partially because of budget constraints,
right,
or the amount of time you have with an actor. You know, we have a really stellar cast and a lot of cool people involved, but in some cases you only have like a day with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you do have to figure some things on the fly for sure.
Kyle, what I loved about the film was, and kind of the mind blower for me, is just having to play a character that has no experience with life. You know, and you do it in such a way that it feels natural. Like the actual character of James, he's lived in a bunker for 25 plus years, and now he is introduced to the real world. As an actor, as someone getting into that character, is that a challenge to play someone who's never, you can't even use references, you can't use,
sure,
anything that you could fall back on?
Yeah, thank you. you know, maybe at a time it was a challenge. We've made several internet videos, and obviously I've done work on SNL and now the movie. I've kind of channeled similar things before in some of my work, but also maybe it's just kind of who I am. We all at times feel like an outsider. You know, there's a party scene in the movie, and James has never experienced a party, and it seems so alien to him. But like, I think for a lot of us, a party, even knowing what a party is already an alien,
right,
experience.
Right.
So it wasn't too difficult, and really nothing is difficult for me because I'm the man.
Well, you just don't want to say that type of stuff.
That's not true. I'm not the man.
also, Kyle has a knack for mannerisms of real life people that we've drawn inspiration from, just like YouTube kids who have their own like little homemade vlog or shows, that I just love how he can bring to these out of touch characters that kind of stilted but charming, you know, performance.
Dave McCary, Kyle Mooney, director and writer and lead of the film Brigsby Bear, which is out in theaters August 4th. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation here at the big table. Stay with us.
Can I just try the cough button?
You can try it, yeah. I think we all have to do the cough button together for it to actually work, because it picks up on my mic or his mic.
Oh.
So it's like a mirror.
Is there a signal?
Yeah, it's like a signal. One, two, three. There it is. There it is. Playing with the cough button here on the download. 720 WGN. In studio tonight, Kyle Mooney, Dave McCary. They are both two of the creative forces behind the film Brigsby Bear, which is out in theaters August 4th. Kyle, co-writer and lead. Dave, the director. Dave, I got to ask you, you know, working in a script in which you are playing this fish out of water, a character who's never experienced anything, you can go in a lot of different directions. You can go big. You can go with joke after joke after joke. But you guys choose not to. There are a lot of things that could happen to the main character, James, that would be uproarious and hilarious in a guy who's never experienced the real world. Yeah. But you guys seem to keep that at a minimum for the sake of the story.
I think that there have been so many fish out of water films or shows, stories that have been told where those types of situations are taken advantage of for comedic purposes, and a lot that have done it so well. We even use the Will Ferrell movie Elf as a reference. It's like it's a great movie, and it's actually heartwarming too. But they lean a little heavier into the comedy, which I mean, not to be too self-deprecating, but I don't think our skill set is jokes per minute. I think we've always gravitated towards, you know, the most honest version of the characters that we create or that Kyle creates. And the mission statement from day one was, how can we make this film feel as sincere and earnest, and we'd love to surprise people. Anyone who goes into the film knowing Kyle's work or our work at SNL, I think, tend to be surprised that the film has so much emotionality, and it's really something that we've always wanted to tackle.
But I noticed that from the work that both of you do on SNL, and I think everyone notices, especially the film work that you guys do, that there is a difference, that, you know, it may not be a sketch as we know it or just one little character piece that's on video. You're going for something different. You're pushing the limits and a little bit more of, I would say, outsider in the same way that we see in some of the digital shorts. Is that what you would say the Good Neighbor style of comedy is Brigsby Bear just an extension of that?
Well, I definitely think you could make the claim that our work at SNL is not totally far off from what we were doing before we got on the show and we were just making internet videos. And I think I'd like to hope that what we make is true to ourselves, and it's stuff that makes us laugh. And, you know, we're not constantly trying to appease a specific audience. You know, we want to make our friends laugh, I think. Obviously, working at that show, you have to think of the audience, and you have to make it broad and by some degree.
Right.
But we've kind of always operated with the notion of, like, let's do what makes us happy. This movie is a slight departure from those videos, just in the sense that, like, I guess, like Dave was saying, like, we're not even, like, really going for any jokes, almost. I mean, there's certainly funny parts, but I think we just kind of felt like there is an inherent comedy within the script and within the experiences James has. So let's just kind of play that stuff as real as we can and hope that we get the laughs. And if we don't, that's fine, too. I think it can exist in different...
I mean, you guys, as a sketch group, as Good Neighbor, the work that you did, obviously, you're able to get to Saturday Night Live and be able to be stars on the show. But talk about the process of going from making sketch comedy to making an independent film. Because we've seen so much that's come out of SNL at certain points where it's a sketch that they turned into an hour-and-a-half movie. But this is different. This is... You could tell from the get-go that this is not a sketch that became something bigger. This is an actual script and a feature.
The biggest difference that I really responded to throughout the process was it's so luxurious to have the time to be precious about you know, the art department stuff, the design, the production design, the you know, pulling references and digging deep into, you know, every state, the edit. And at SNL, you really every week just have, you know, a day of pre-production, a day of production, and a day of editing, and you're cutting your short film up until the show airs and essentially putting out a rough cut to millions of people every week. And it's artistically, it's tough, but it's also a really exhilarating challenge,
and
we're super grateful for that experience. But I'm also so grateful for going through that before making my first feature, because it just made all of the preparation for this movie that much more fulfilling.
I think also, like, you know, I feel like maybe you're getting at the idea of these sketches that are just kind of stretched out into movies. And that was never our goal. I think, you know, there's definitely something very romantic about making your first movie, and it's something we've probably thought about since we were like 9 or 10 years old. So I think we're fans of movies. I like movies. And I think we just wanted to make something that was decent and had a decent story and could kind of hold up as its own thing.
Yeah. I guess for you guys, I mean, both being in the cast and a writer and director at SNL, is the goal for your careers, did you guys start out with Good Neighbor? Like, we want to be able to put our own product out, meaning we want to be able to do our own independent film, our own, maybe our own show.
Yeah,
and
Saturday
Night Live is just a means to an end.
Well, at first it was we were trying to sell a, like, sketch show. We really felt like there were a number of shows that were coming out around the time when we were really hungry to have our own thing outside of the internet, because we had been doing internet videos for so long, and we're really excited to take that next step. We didn't know exactly what it would be. We weren't necessarily thinking, like, we're just waiting on that SNL call. We were trying to get our own, you know, a cohesive, you know, show that was purely our voice. But
I think, if anything, SNL just felt unrealistic. You know what I mean? It's so, we grew up loving the show. I love the show.
It's so larger than life.
But it just didn't feel like something, like a job a person could actually have. So when that opportunity came, obviously it changes your life, and we of course want to do the best work we can there. But, you know, everybody, you know, you want to have, creatively, there's things we can't do there that we want to do. So certainly, like, we're always going to be trying things out when we can.
Yeah. Kyle Mooney, Dave McCary in studio tonight, both members of Good Neighbor Sketch Group. Also, Kyle is a cast member at SNL, and Dave, a writer and director at SNL. The movie Brigsby Bear is out in theaters August 4th. We'll take a quick break for the news. We'll come back, continue our conversation with Kyle and Dave. Stay with us.
All right, more coming up here on The Download with Kyle Mooney and Dave McCary, both the creative forces not only behind SNL, but also Good Neighbor, the sketch group, and the new movie Brigsby Bear, which is out. I love the movie. I think it's great. And I know I'm not a film reviewer, and I say that a lot on the show, but I really, really enjoyed this film. It comes out this weekend, I think, at Landmark Cinema in Chicago, maybe right there on Diversity. But Brigsby Bear is the name of the movie. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on The Download with Kyle Mooney and Dave McCary right after the news. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio tonight, Kyle Mooney, Dave McCary, both of the sketch group Good Neighbor and, of course, SNL, and their movie Brigsby Bear, which is out in theaters on August 4th. And like I said, I love the film. I think it's an original script and something that you don't see every day, especially coming from SNL comedians who, you know, are – it's a different kind of breed. I guess what I want to get at, too, is does when you have success on a show like Saturday Night Live, and you guys are obviously together from your time as growing up in high school.
Yeah.
Does that sometimes, because of what you mentioned earlier, Dave, the idea that the schedule is like boom, ba boom, ba boom, same, you know, does it get in the way of vision for the sketch group that, you know, might be in the future where you're like, we're not ever going to be able to get to Brigsby Bear because I got to think about what's next next week on SNL?
Well, one of the fortunate things about the show is, yeah, those episode weeks are insane, and you're living at the office and there are 80-hour weeks or whatever, but there's 21 episodes in a season. You get 31 weeks off. So it's up to you if you really want to go after a side project. Like, if people really do you know, ambitiously will work at that show and have a movie every year. Our first 2 years, we didn't. We were so exhausted, and we just wanted.
Yeah,
to.
Yeah, a lot of it's, you definitely have the opportunity to just party all summer if you so choose. But also, I think we were very fortunate in the sense that Kevin Costello, who I wrote the movie with, I pitched him the idea months before I got hired by the show. So basically, my first 2-3 years on the show, any chance I'd get, I'd fly to LA and we'd work on it together. But he was kind of scripting while I was busy doing SNL, you know, on the show.
Yeah,
so,
he was like laying the groundwork.
And I feel like a lot of I'm just very lucky because like a lot of cast members wouldn't have that luxury, you know what I mean, to just have somebody in essence working on their project for them while they're, you know, doing the show.
A lot of cast members don't have the luxury of having former sketch group
having friends.
You're having friends, you know, on the show. But talk right. about your relationship, you know, obviously in the group, but even before that, going back to high school, even before that, I guess. But talk about how that helps you on SNL and in your projects now, the fact that you guys can lean on each other and take risks because you know each other.
Well, it certainly helps at a show that is very daunting and you can have a bad week and feel like crap, and when you have your best friend there, it's a lot easier to get through those rough times. And I feel terrible for some of the people who have gone through that show and have not had seasons that they're extremely proud of, and they've kind of sat in the sadness of that, and they didn't have their best friends that they'd worked with forever. So that was a huge, and we also get to ride the highs together, which is so special.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I think we've just, harnessed this sense of humor together over the years where, like we said, we just have this shorthand where it's so easy to, I know whenever Kyle reaches out about a new video that he's found on YouTube or a obscure VHS that he found at a thrift store, like I just have this trust that he's struck gold. If he's excited by it, then I'm pretty sure I'm going to be excited by it because there's not a lot of things that he likes that I dislike, and hopefully vice versa.
There's also sports. those moments in our I like sports. There's also moments in our personal history that we, I can always like Dave will be the only person who I could be like, do you remember when Allison C. dumped that bottle of Pepsi on your head in the ninth grade?
And I actually didn't remember that.
And constantly having to re-explain the time that you really made Allison mad.
Kyle and I had the beginning of our friendship was a little rocky in that Kyle was the class clown of, I was not in the same class as him in elementary school, but I knew he was the funny guy in his class. And I also was the funny guy in my class, Miss Olson's, and Kyle was in Mr. Christian's. But I didn't know what he was doing that was so funny. And I think I was threatened by him. And there's a point.
There's a rivalry starting.
There was a rivalry a little. I mean, I don't know if rivalry is the word, but Kyle remembers this well. I don't. Kyle came up to a group of us, me and some friends at recess, and I was like, joking around, and he entered the circle, and I like pinpointed him, and I was like, you're not a part of this, and I sucked back then. And then I got to know Kyle the next year. We were in carpool together, and realized how brilliant he was, and he made me laugh more than anyone in the world and continues to this day.
And now because of me, you're going to be rich.
I don't believe that necessarily.
So you don't believe in me?
I don't believe that in my own career.
Dave McCary and Kyle Mooney in studio tonight. They are the guys behind the movie Brigsby Bear, which will be out this weekend in Chicago. They are also cast members and directors at Saturday Night Live.
There's magic and wonders and mysteries in store. A hero whose mission is to learn and explore. He's daring and caring and knows so much more. It's Brigsby Bear. He travels the skies and the stars through the night. He battles Sun Snatcher with all of his might. He's strong, never wrong, cause he always does right. It's Brigsby Bear. And even when trouble is just around the bend, he'll keep us so safe, cause he's always our friend. The bear who is there through the thickest and thin. It's Brigsby Bear. It's Brigsby Bear. It's Brigsby Bear. Mysteries in store, a hero whose mission is to learn and explore. He's daring and caring and knows so much more. It's Brigsby Bear.
Trying to convince my wife and her friends, were kind of going on a double date on Saturday, to skip Girls Trip. That's the movie that's on the agenda, and go see Brigsby Bear instead.
I don't know if that one is for like a group outing. Is it?
Brigsby?
Yeah.
I think it'd be fine. I think it'd be great. But I don't know. I've heard that Girls Trip got good reviews.
Yeah.
But I'm also like, I don't know if I want that kind of party movie. It's like, party!
Yeah, it's one of the summer successes.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right, well, maybe I'll go see that. I already saw Brigsby Bear, but I want other people to see it, too.
Why don't you take them to see Imperfections, David Singer movie?
I did the thing yesterday. I was going through the trailers. We're watching new trailers. Mm-hmm. It's a fun thing to do on Comcast, and Imperfections is up there. Like, it's in the new movies, or premium movies that you want to watch. It was up there. I was like, hey. I told my son, I was like, hey, I know that guy. It's a friend of mine.
And he wasn't impressed.
I was like, is he in Minecraft? Oh, he's not in Minecraft? Okay. It's kind of I was thinking about it. It's already beginning of August, and I guess it's normally in the next 2 weeks or so is when you'll start to get the announcement for new cast members for Saturday Night Live.
Right.
You know, they haven't, because they lost a lot. This last year they lost Vanessa Bayer,
mm-hmm.
Bobby Moynihan.
Mm-hmm.
Sashir Zameda.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was one more too. They have spots to fill.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what they do. You know, if they go the route of Chicago, and that's always one of the Chicagoans always get a
seems
a good
so. Yeah.
Look. I thought it was very interesting that the new show for Saturday or for Second City just was announced. They've got a new review coming up, and I can't wait to ask. Next time Chris Jones is on, how strange it is to have a full, almost the entire cast at Second City main stage was replaced.
Yeah, that seems odd.
I mean, usually it's one or two people and they have some holdovers. There's only one holdover. The rest, and a lot of that has to do with people move on. They go to LA, or they move on to New York, they get jobs, this, that, and the other. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of an interesting idea that the whole cast, and maybe that's something to think about, that, you know, maybe there's something there that some of the people who are on stage at Second City might be moving on to SNL if they are not going to be a part of the new review.
Right.
Or they just cleaned house. One of the two. Either way, it's a story.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess if you're Saturday Night Live and Lorne Michaels and people there, you can't cast based on the Trump administration, because every 3 days somebody.
Yeah.
Have a Reince Priebus now. We finally got a Reince Priebus,
right,
and then
right.
All right, I got something to tell you. You know, Reince is gone. So
yeah, I mean there was all that talk about the guy from Sex and the City saying he wanted to play Scaramucci.
Yeah, and he did it on the President's Show on your dad's favorite show.
My dad loves that show.
Yeah.
My mom and dad are like, that's a great show.
I know, poor old Mario Cantone.
Yeah, that's it. Now he's out. Yeah.
Yeah, there's one. It was like, oh, I'm going to replenish or, you know, get my career back. I guess,
you think about it. Alec Baldwin's coming back. He said he's going to do Trump again. So they don't really need the secondary characters.
Yeah.
You know, Kellyanne Conway will probably be around. But
yeah, they're talking about her maybe being the communications director.
Adie Bryant did Huckabee Sanders towards the end there.
So
she could play that. Yeah.
Your main.
I mean, they kind of make a joke about death being Bannon, Steve Bannon.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a dumb joke. I hate that joke. I get it, but it's like straight out of like Black Box sketch comedy show. Like, all right, okay.
And they have the Sons. The Sons are still there. Right. So they're fine.
They got pretty much the only ones that haven't been fired, right? I can make a bet that the first sketch out of the box will be a look back at the people who've been fired. They'll do in the first episode. They'll do some bit about the people who are gone. Like almost like a
in memoriam type thing.
In memoriam, or possibly like an Apprentice parody. You know, there's a lot of things you could do there. We didn't get a chance to talk about this. I didn't mention in the carryout. I should have. But the Chris Christie in Milwaukee. I don't know if you missed that story. I don't know how you could. But the idea that Chris Christie not only was in Milwaukee, he was at Bourbonnais today too. That's what I heard this morning. They were saying he was at Bears camp.
Is he
doing something like a documentary or something?
Well, he was there on Saturday at the game, and I was like, why is Chris Christie there? So I did some investigating, and his son works for the Brewers.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, that makes sense that he's there watching the game for the weekend.
But why would he show up
at the Bears camp?
At Bears camp. Is he got a? The question is, does he have like a camera crew with him? Is it going to be like, my year, I'm going around the country with Chris Christie. But my favorite shot,
shows.
I didn't see the video of it, but I saw some pictures of him accosting the fan after the fan yelled at him. And it's just this close-up shot, and I'm sure it's the photo heard around the world kind of thing. But he's leaning over saying something to the dude. It's just like that bearded hipster guy, Cubs jersey. And in the left hand, he has a helmet nachos. Right? And in the right, he's, you know, maybe he's pointing. But then, I mean, just right up in our face is the high belted khaki. I mean, so much khaki. Like, I mean, and even leaning over where he's getting in the guy's face and trying to intimidate him, I'm like, I don't know too many people who wear their pants that high.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
No, I mean, I understand he's probably got a body type that doesn't. There's not a lot of options for the waistline. But the idea of covering that up and hiking it up to essentially the ribs.
Yeah.
It's a strange.
There's got to be another way.
There's got to be another way. Shorter pants, maybe?
Is that it?
Lower, shorter pants? I don't know. I'm not, by any stretch, like, I'm not trying to body shame or get into that business.
No.
I just think that fashion choice.
Yeah.
Maybe there's
be.
Not a lot of options, but that fashion choice of pleated khakis at the baseball game, first off, belted up to your ribs. It's such a weird look.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, and as the heckler, just saying, hypocrite, or whatever he said, I don't know how you don't say, what's with the pants? What's with the pleated pants? What's he going to say, you know?
And as the governor of New Jersey, I read a Deadspin thing where if you're the governor of New Jersey, you're going to get heckled for, you know, the rest of your life, probably.
Yeah.
To stop, you know that people are going to be filming this. You're overweight, right. And you're holding what we thought may have been brachos, which is a Milwaukee delicacy of chips and sausage and nachos and stuff. It's just not going to be. It's not going to end up well for Governor Christie, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree. And I have a funny story about that. I was at the Costco not too long ago, and they had a bratwurst pizza, and it was 2 for $5 kind of thing, and something like that. And it said on it, as made or as sold at Brewer Stadium. And I was like, well, it's got to be good. It's it's baseball food.
Yeah.
Right? They do bratwurst pizza up there. That must be good.
Yeah.
I kept thinking about, like, when I go to White Sox Park, I'm like, best food in the business. So I get it. I bring it home. The wife's like, what is this? And I'm like, it's a bratwurst pizza. As you could see, it was made. It's made in Brewer Stadium. What's your problem? So I cook it up, man. And I'm like, this is going to be good. And, like, the minute you pull it out and you're like, you smell it, you're like, those smells don't go together.
Yeah.
Like, there's like a, yeah, like the froze, like the unfreezing, the heating up of sausage and a Gouda type sauce with, like, you know, I was just like, I had like two pieces. I'm like, So then when she came back, I'm like, hey, you know how you said that about the pizza? You were right.
Ah.
It was bad. I had to call it out. I'm like, but I thought, just like you did, looking at that, you're like, that's probably great.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man.
Just, there's a reason that, you know, that your sausage, your pepperoni.
Right.
Those are the ones you see normally on commercials when they show Papa John's and Domino's commercials. Right.
They're not showing bratwurst.
They're not showing bratwurst.
I just figured, you know, if they're using bratwurst in so many different things in Wisconsin, I feel they've got a feel, they've got a vibe, they've got something that we should, you know, I know enough about Wisconsin to go, hey, they know their food.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in this case, I'm not sure they do. I think that bratwurst should be in a bun with some onions and some mustard. And that's probably it.
Maybe some kraut, some sauerkraut.
Yeah, put some sauerkraut on it. But putting it into nachos, mm-hmm. or putting it into pizza, things like that, I think you're going in the wrong direction. Right? I mean, I think we go in the wrong direction there. I know we make weird food choices. I mean, stuffed pizza. You know,
like
is,
the crust
is a weird,
stuffed with cheese,
yeah,
and things like that, or just the
this
general
huge
stuff.
Huge pie that's, you know, 38 inches of cheese pie, or Italian beef sandwich where we put the hottest stuff that's not real vegetables. It's crunchy, hot. It's just crunchy stuff, and you know, like, so I understand. I'm not saying that Illinois is. Or Chicago has got it down necessarily when it comes to food, although I do think we do. So I can understand someone in Wisconsin being like, no, you're crazy. Bratwurst goes with everything. But in this case, I'm not sure it does. Like, I like the bratwurst. I'm not sure it works in any other way than bratwurst.
I think when we went up there last year, because we went up during the last series, because there was, or maybe it was two years ago, actually, when there was the Cubs could have possibly won the division if the Cardinals would have lost or something like that. Yeah. So we went up to, like, oh, yeah, let's drive up to the last game, the last Sunday, drive up to Milwaukee. We'll see the game. And then, you know, by the third inning, it was moot. They, you know, they weren't going to win the division.
You didn't recognize it was like day game versus night. And like,
yeah,
oh,
something
it's already
like
been
that.
Decided.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so that was, we were like, oh man. And it was like horrible traffic.
I
think my wife's dad got the brachos and he was a fan.
Do you, here's my question. When you go to a Brewers game, especially when they play the Cubs, is it just completely evident that it's all Chicagoans? Like, when watching the game this weekend, it didn't feel much of a home game for Milwaukee. It just seemed all Cubs.
Yeah, I was watching this weekend too, and there is a limited amount of Brewers fans, which is unfortunate because
the whole state goes for them. Yeah.
And they're still in. You know, when I went that 2 years ago, you know, the Brewers are 40 games out. It didn't matter. It was all Cubs fans. I don't think any Brewers fans are selling their tickets to Cubs fans just come on up. We won't be there. But I don't know. There's something I get irritated when I see people raising the W flag in another ballpark.
That's crazy. How do you do that? I am so with you on that. Like, I understand that you got cheaper tickets and you drove to a visiting ballpark, but you don't get to take the traditions and honor and you just don't get to take that stuff and take it to a different park, right?
Yeah. Like, they're not going to play Go Cubs Go on the Brewers loudspeed. I don't know.
I just have some
respect for the, you know, with the win.
I felt that way a little bit in the playoffs, too, because you saw it in San Francisco and in L.A., even in Cleveland, where it was just like, we're doing things like, I don't know. Like, I think there's a tradition. There should be a difference between a tradition of Wrigley Field and a tradition of the Cubs. And I think there's a tradition of Wrigley Field, which is the W. That's the whole idea. Mm-hmm. You raise the W when you win. Or Go Cubs Go, which is only played, it's not on the radio, it's like, here's a hit,
mm-hmm.
Go Cubs go. You know, it's played at Wrigley Field after a win. So it just seems to me like that's a Wrigley Field tradition.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that stuff goes with if they, when they move to Hoffman Estates finally, but...
Yeah, I don't like seeing the... I don't see it like... I would be annoyed if I was at, you know, Wrigley Field and the Cubs lost a tight game to a division rival and they, you know, the opposing team was raising the their colors.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's... I mean, you see that the guy... What was the story that just happened about the Packers fan who sued Soldier Field, maybe the Bears organization, because he wanted to put he wanted to wear the Packers stuff down on the sideline or like where he was at, he has front row tickets, and he was he put a banner up that was like "Go Pack, Go" at Soldier Field, and they're like, "You can't put that up, go," and he sued, and he, I think he won, they're like, "You can do whatever," but I think in the court of public appeal for all of us,
yeah,
you're a loser. You don't go into somebody else's stadium. Can you imagine if Bears fans did that?
Yeah.
Like, went into the Lambeau and, like, put a huge thing up that said, Devin Hester, you know, touchdown here, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Can you imagine pulling that kind of stunt in Philadelphia?
Yeah, right. I mean, exactly. Like, the Giants bring an Eli Manning. Guy brings an Odell Beckham, like, flat thing and puts it on the front. What are you doing?
Yeah. I'm not a big jersey wearer either, so I just always think something understated is always, like, just, you know, might wear a cap. Maybe a shirt under another shirt, but
I even
I'm in the minority.
I always get upset because I'm not upset, but I'm on the fence. Even my loyalties. I love sports and I love the Chicago sports. It's all Chicago sports, and not one team in any sport that I don't root for that's in Chicago. Yet I'm a little bit skittish about going to Lambeau dressed in all Bears garb. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sort of like, there's, you know, we do that. People do that. They want to show their pride and they wear their jersey. I get it. But I'm always like, I had this great, I had told this before, but I went to a Bears game a couple years ago, like 15, 20 years ago. And it was the old Soldier Field before they renovated it. And we sat on the visitor's side. There's two sides, like whatever their sideline was, because it was cheap. That's how we got it. We just went to Coconuts and got tickets because that's what you could do, right? And it was a Niners-Bears game. It was the famous Niners-Bears game where the Bears came back and Mike Brown had the interception overtime.
Yeah.
Got to see that live. Oh. That's awesome. It was much better in your memory than it was in the moment because you're like, that was one of those things where it's like every play was reviewed and every play was a third down. Everything turned into a fourth and four. And they barely get it, but they have to review it to see if they had enough yards. And I'm like, you're still down 14. And they ended up winning. Anyway, I digress. The guys show up in the 49ers. And they're all, there's a whole line of them, right? And somebody yells out from Chicago saying, hey, why don't you go back to San Francisco? Expletive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Or he goes, why don't you go have a wine and cheese party? Expletive. That's what he says. And the guy turns around and goes, why don't you go work in a factory for $7 an hour? That was his response to Chicago. The San Francisco guy said, why don't you go work in a factory for $7 an hour? I was like, touche. That was a good one.
Wow.
No swears either.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the Bears
elevated.
The Bears it was homophobic. It was gross. It's like San Francisco, you know, you're just like, what are you doing? Why would you say that? But the response was even better. So I give the San Francisco guy a lot of credit. He probably still got beat up in the parking lot, but all right. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. Coming up, Sam Panionovich joins us from Sox Park to talk about the Sox and Cubs at the deadline and a really gruesome injury that does not look good for our brand new superstar. We'll have an update on that. Thanks, Rob. Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, the Chicago baseball teams both had some movement at the trade deadline. Talk about what the Cubs got for their stretch run and what the Sox got for 2027. Also, terrible news at the G rate tonight. That's where Sam Panionovich is at. Why don't we start there, Sam? I just looked over at the monitor and saw the future of the Chicago White Sox face down and a cart coming to pick him up. What's the what happened with Yoan Moncada tonight?
Not exactly what you thought you would see on a Monday night on the South Side. Top prospect Yoan Moncada was ranging out in a shallow right field to try and catch a fly ball. The ball fell between Moncada, who was playing second, and Willie Garcia in right. Problem is, once that ball landed, these two were on a collision course, and Moncada, running full speed, hit Garcia's jaw with his right knee. Ugh. And then he was carted off the field. Jose Abreu, the Sox first baseman, carried his countryman onto the cart, placed him on the cart, and he wasn't seen putting any pressure on that right leg. Now, I'm not a doctor. It's tough for me to speculate. The initial reports from down in the dugout are a knee bruise. There wasn't any hyperextension or any of that, but we're going to wait on a full update from the White Sox. He was taken out of the game. Both players were. But the lead of the story is the top prospect for the Chicago White Sox was just carted off the field.
Never want to see that. The only thing that you could say from a layman's view here in the studio is that it didn't look like what you see in football where knees bend the wrong way. He hit it on a guy's skull. It's a terrible, terrible thing. But there could be some hope that this is a knee bruise, a contusion, as opposed to something worse, a tear that keeps him out for months.
I was actually shocked that Willie Garcia got up. Can you imagine taking a knee to the face at full speed? I mean, that was the more amazing thing out of it. Not that there's anything positive with a collision in the outfield, but yeah, I mean, Moncada certainly wasn't putting any pressure on it. Like I said, Abreu kind of picked him up and put him on the cart, and then the cart rolled all the way from right field into center. He was in the tunnel. He was spotted by CSN Chicago sort of limping around as they're going to take some x-rays right now. But for Garcia to get hit like that with a full speed knee to the throat, jaw area, and get up and live to tell about it, that was amazing.
Yeah. Not a good Monday. I will ask this before we get on to the trade deadline. The one thing I will say is that the White Sox have always done a good job of doing half-price night on Mondays, Tuesdays, I believe, also in the mix. They have one tonight. How's the crowd out there for a team that is not competitive, does not have much to say in terms of stars being put on the field?
Not great, especially coming after the heels of the Cubs series where you thought, you know, maybe some momentum would carry over. It was a nice crowd, too, against the Indians. Division rival, Cleveland, a first-place team. I'd say there's probably 15,000 people. They're going to announce the official number, I think, in the seventh or eighth inning, but not a great crowd, even on half-price Monday. You mentioned the Tuesday promotions, and now, how about this? Every Wednesday from here on out for the rest of the season, Dollar Hot Dog Wednesdays, baby. Feel the power.
Yeah, I got to get out there. Sam Panionovic on the line. We are talking about Chicago baseball. Let's stay with the White Sox. A lot was made of what they did before the trade deadline by shipping Jose Quintana to the Cubs, but all eyes were on what they were going to do now after those moves, including the move to send Todd Frazier and company to the Yankees. Melky Cabrera goes to the Royals. Not as fun, though, when we talk about cash consideration, a couple of A-ball players.
Right, that's the old joke. Well, you should have the press conference and just pull up a chair and lay some cash on the table and see if the cash will take any questions. Look, we've talked about this for weeks. If there was any talented veterans on the South Side, they were gone. It was sort of like a chance for you to prove yourself, hey, if you can cut it right now through June and July and prove that you can hit, we're going to trade you. You can pitch out of the bullpen, we're going to trade you, because they're all about throwing those players to the side and bringing in younger, more cost-controlled players with higher upside. And that's exactly what they did. The exclamation point yesterday, the cherry on the sundae, Melky Cabrera. I mean, they traded him to Kansas City. They don't even care. They're just trading him to division rivals now.
Right.
So it wasn't about competing this year. It never was about 2017. It's not even about 2018. This is about 19, 20, and 21 in the future. And everybody that had either an expiring contract or a nice little control piece like Quintana, who signed for a couple more years, if they could bring returns in, they had to go. And that's exactly what Rick Hahn did. He sped up this process. I mean, if you look at the roster on opening day and you look at the roster right now, there are 8 or 9 guys that aren't on this team all because of trades. It's really it's really a crazy turnaround here on the south side of Chicago.
The White Sox just tweeted out injury update. Yoan Moncada day-to-day with right knee contusion. X-rays were negative. So good
to
know.
Bruce, it's a knee bruise.
Yeah.
Good thing that the x-rays were negative. Of course, that just broke since we've been on the phone. But
right.
It didn't look like, you know, because in basketball or in football, when the knee kind of buckles on the turf or somebody steps on a player's shoe and it twists or whatever, there was none of that. This was just a full-on collision,
straight
knee on jaw. And that's sort of a sigh of relief for White Sox fans that it's not anything, you know, x-ray positive at least.
So here's a question before we move on to the bigger story, which is the Cubs. For the White Sox, now that they've cleared out, and they couldn't get offers on Holland or Clippard or Gonzalez, those guys will stick around. But now, does that pave the way with a Melky Cabrera out of the pitcher to see some of these prospects, an Eloy Jimenez maybe from the Cubs trade, or some of the haul from the Yankees trade? Will we see any of the guys come up in the next couple months?
I don't think you'll see any of those guys. Certainly not Jimenez. He's still an A-ball right now. He's playing with Winston-Salem. The guy they got from the Yankees, Rutherford, he's an A-ball as well. Reynaldo Lopez may be the next piece to come up. He's been dominant in Charlotte, AAA. There was some talk that he could possibly be called up tomorrow, maybe start tomorrow, maybe later on in the week. I think he's the next domino to come up. But there's no rush. I mean, honestly, what's the rush of bringing a guy up and having him come to a team that's going to lose 9,500 games? There really is no rush. Especially when some of these guys getting the back end of the season, they're on inning limits. You know, Michael Kopech in Birmingham throws a lot of pitches, a lot of innings. Lopez is already at 115 innings. So I don't think there's really any need to rush these guys up. You may see one or two more trickle in, but the meat of these prospects are still in A-ball and double-A. So there is no timetable. There is no reason to bring any of these guys up right now. Let them progress naturally. Let them dominate at the levels that they're at and then keep climbing that ladder. But I think it's maybe one or two more guys you'll see this year, and then more guys will start to trickle in next season and the year after that.
Well, that's boring.
Well, what do you expect? It's a rebuild. You thought they were just going to just put duct tape on?
Yeah, I want the Charlotte Knights to be starting on the in the game against Toronto tomorrow night. All of them.
All of them. Well, they'd be cheaper. They would save the Ryan Reserve some money, but no, I don't think that's realistic. I'm sorry to break it.
Sam Banjanovich, WGN Radio Sports, on the line with us, talking Chicago baseball. We just got done with the White Sox. Let's turn to the division-leading Chicago Cubs, 2.5 up on the Brewers after taking 2 of 3 from them up in Milwaukee this weekend. The Cubs made some moves. They brought Justin Wilson and Alex Avila to Wrigley. What does that mean? I mean, these are pieces that aren't necessarily needs at this point. We've got great arms and we've got a great catcher. What does this do? Just provide depth?
Well, it solidifies the left arms in the bullpen. I mean, this was a guy, Justin Wilson, who's been saving games for Detroit. Throws it up pretty high, mid-90s. He's got a really nice off-speed pitch and a changeup. He's a guy that's going to give you, you know, a left-handed arm, and he's actually better against righties. You know, you think when you bring in a lefty pitcher, well, how's he going to fare against lefties? He's actually better against righties than he is against lefties. But it's a depth arm for the bullpen to sort of spell C.J. Edwards, who's got on pace to throw in 70 games this year. They've been throwing guys left and right. They've been throwing them a lot. So another arm in the pen. And then for Avila, who, by the way, was a White Sox last year, he's just a backup catcher, a veteran guy, a presence in that locker room, because Wilson Contreras can't play every day. Now, in the postseason, he's going to play 89% of the games, but you just don't want to tire out Wilson Contreras in the month of July, late July, August, September, because you got to keep him fresh for the playoffs. And Avila brings a left-handed bat. He's been hitting around 300, knows how to call a game pretty well. He's got a pretty decent arm, but these are just depth pieces. You're right. The heavy lifting was done. That's when they acquired Jose Quintana. He's going to slide into that number two spot in the rotation. And the Cubs sort of had a quiet deadline, but they got the pieces they needed depth-wise, and they're certainly the favorites in the NL Central, no doubt about it.
I was reading around today, and it's such a, you know, you can't really say one way or the other, but that there is a thought that maybe they overpaid for guys like Avila and Wilson. The guys that they gave up were highly touted prospects. They make the Tigers better in the long run. What about the depleting of the Chicago Cubs farm system, even though, I mean, I don't know if that's that big of a deal right now because they're so young?
Well, the question for me is simple to ask you. Would you rather have another World Series ring or would you rather have the number one farm system in baseball? Go ahead. I mean, you know, it's cool to have good prospects and to tout the system, and the Cubs built a really strong system from 12, 13, and 14 and then started to bring guys up in 15, but this is Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer pushing their young chips toward the middle. I mean, these guys aren't trying to save for next year. They want to win again this year. They want to go back-to-back. And for Candelario, he's a third baseman, maybe a first baseman. He could play some left field. Okay, you've got Bryan at third, Rizzo at first, and Schwarber in left. Where are you going to play this guy?
Yeah.
So you can't keep everybody, and we've talked about this as well on your show. Eventually, you have to flip some of these younger guys for some proven pieces that will help you win now. They trade Jimenez and Cease for Quintana, and they ship Candelario away to bring in some depth in the bullpen and a backup catcher. So I don't have a problem with it. I trust Jason McLeod. He'll be able to scout and bring in some more young players. But this is not about the future. It's about the present.
Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this. I mean,
it might be a little bit more about who the Cubs didn't get at the deadline. They had a quiet deadline. They went out and got Quintana, and that's great. But the Dodgers made hay with getting Yu Darvish. I mean, that the Dodgers are right now the far and away the favorites to win the NL. They just got a lot better by bringing in a Cy Young perennial to be a number two or three, even when Kershaw's out. What I mean, how did the Cubs stack up to the Dodgers? The Dodgers, a team that seems to be destined to get over the hump.
Well, I saw the odds in Vegas actually about 2 hours ago, and the top three teams in the National League, according to the casinos and the sports books, Dodgers are one, Nationals are two, and the Cubs are third. Now, you can mix and match those however you may. I still think in Major League Baseball, it is super tough to go back-to-back. It hasn't been done since 2000. The sport is sort of stacked against the champs. It's hard to get back there and go through that gauntlet again. But I do think that 1-2-3 punch, like you said, you talked about Kershaw 1, Darvish 2, Alex Wood, a lefty, he's having a Cy Young-type season. He's their third guy in the rotation. He is so good. And then that Nationals lineup, whoo, man, they can hit. They beat the Brewers last week 15-2. They hit like 7 or 8 home runs. They've got the power bats. The Dodgers have the power arms, and the Cubs are the reigning champs. So you have a nice mix there, nice. 1, 2, and 3. I think, like you said, you can mix them back and forth. But that's the way Vegas sees it. They see Dodgers, Nationals, and Cubs. That's the way they're going to power.
Well, right now, I mean, it's a little bit early because you're only you know, 2 months up, or there's still 2 months to play, right, before they even start the playoffs. But the question I have is that the way it would work is that the wild card would go right to the number one seed, the Dodgers, and so it's inevitable that the Cubs would be playing the Nationals in an NLDS, I guess, right? So, I mean, that's something that Bryce Harper versus the Chicago Cubs, there's something great in that. I mean, that's great. Dusty Baker in there. I mean, that's a nice little storyline.
Yeah, maybe they'll bring Sosa back. I mean, Bartman got a ring. Maybe they'll bring Sammy back. He can run the flag out. That'd be awesome.
That would be the time. Yeah, let's start. My last question for you just has to do with Steve Bartman today. I mean, giving him a World Series ring, you did mention the idea that why not go for Sammy Sosa, bring the team back together. What do you make of the idea of giving Steve Bartman a World Series ring?
Look, and I joked about this on Twitter, and I was on John Williams earlier today, and I think what Steve Bartman had to go through was hell. It was terrible. The fact that Cub fans actually blamed him for losing that series in 2003 is preposterous. It's insane. I can't even put any more ridiculous words on it. That's how sad it was. That being said, what position does Steve Bartman play? What organizational role does Steve Bartman have? I get what he went through. Actually, I don't get what he went through. I can't even imagine what he went through, but just giving the guy a ring. I know the Cubs can do what they want, but I don't know. I didn't like the way they announced it. They made a big deal about it. It was just really kind of tacky to me, to be honest.
Yeah. Sam Benjanovich down at Sox Park watching Marco Estrada make easy work of the White Sox tonight. That guy's a good pitcher. Someone should pick him up, too. lots to talk about when it comes to baseball, and we did it. Sam, talk to you soon.
Hey, it's Bulls night. There's 15,000 here. Go Bulls!
Download here at 720 WGN. Coming up, we start our Lollapalooza week. Right after the news, we're going to talk with Braden Lawrence. He's a drummer for The Districts. They are a band out of Philadelphia, indie rock band. They're blowing up, man. They are the darlings, if you will. But they're playing Pitchfork coming up this weekend, I think on Saturday. Kwaku Collins will be live in studio. He'll be performing as part of Studio 435. He'll be at Lollapalooza on Thursday. We'll talk with him. We had him on about a year ago. We talked to a young kid. I mean, I think he was like 18 years old when he was on the show. And I think he's either 19 or 20 now. But he's had such success off the album he came in to talk about. And now he's at Lollapalooza. How great is that for a Chicago artist to have a chance to be on that stage and perform? But first, he performs here at Studio 435 tonight, so that's great. So, yeah, I did my part this week, Pete, I realized I was so excited to pay probably about $16 in tolls. I think in the last, I would say 3 days, just with all the traveling and everything, mm-hmm. I probably put about $25 into the state of Illinois.
Wow.
Tolls.
That's a lot of driving.
But then I realized that I was probably giving more to the state of Indiana because we went out to Valpo, and I realized that most of those tolls are the Indiana toll road. But the Skyway, $5, and that's privatized, so no one's getting money. So I didn't give any money back to anybody.
So it turns out.
I know. But this is from my – I said I, like many of you out there, would forego the tradition of – the Chicago tradition of spending more time in traffic to avoid the toll road. If it meant that money would go into schools, right? If it went into there right now, Governor Rauner wants a mandatory veto. We don't have enough money for schools, this, that, and the other, and the state needs money. We have $15 billion backlog. Fine. I'll stop avoiding tolls. There you go. You can have a couple more bucks.
Yeah, you'd even take 294 to
I
get
said,
here.
I said I'll take 294.
To come to work.
I'll start. I will go out of my way to take 294. And I realized as I was bragging to my wife about my newfound, you know, sort of civic responsibility, that, yeah, the Skyway is $5. $5 is where it's at right now.
That's
$5 to get on the Skyway to go to Indiana. Then you get to the Indiana side, it's $1.75. Then there's another 85 cents when you get off in Valpo. So that's $8 or so to drive, not including gas, from Chicago, 50 miles, 45 miles to Valparaiso, Indiana.
Yeah, you can't take side streets, take Ashland.
You can take 94. I would take Ashland the whole way. I'm totally a guy who would do that. But you can take 94 and avoid all that. There's more construction, there's more traffic, all that kind
of
stuff. It's just not even that much longer. Anyone who's listening right now would be like, suck it up. The Skyway is just a nicer.
Yeah.
You just fly right through. You're supposed to get what you pay for.
Do they have, because, I mean, we've used it for various trips to Michigan and Indiana. Yeah. And do they have the amount, like, I don't,
yeah,
since
they,
we have the, you
well,
know.
Well, the Skyway will tell you there's a big sign that says $5.
Yeah.
The other ones, I don't think they do. I think after a while, they just hope you don't pay attention.
Yeah. Because when you have the thing, you know, that's just you don't worry about it.
And I realized when I was doing the Skyway one, I'm like, hey, all right, I'm giving back. But then I remember that we don't own the Skyway.
Yeah.
Some Australian company does. We privatized all that stuff. So there's not even a way for me to give back civically to my fair city. Because we sold that. I said, you know what I'll do? I'll park down here. I won't park in the lot. I'll park on the meters just so I can get back. I'm not helping the city. That goes to some other company.
What are you going to do to help the city?
They don't give me a lot of options. Now they're talking surge pricing. Here it comes. I told you. Talking about that. They should call me Mr. Surge. Like that would be my villain name because I've been talking about this. I've been talking about how surge pricing is the next thing that the city's going to gradually and quietly pull out on all of us. Sunny day, it's more to park by the park. Right now, it's Wrigley Field on, you know, game days. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, we'll jack that up. Some downtown stuff. Well, when there's things going on. But now we're letting somebody else, somebody in the, I don't know, the something office, dictate the parking surge office, dictate the price of parking based on how they feel. A computer's going to be like, it is sunny. People want to go to the water park.
Was it going to be like a mood ring thing? You got to stick your finger in the machine?
Yeah, absolutely.
It checks like your pH?
That's next. There's going to be Walgreens machines out there checking your blood sugar. That's good. I mean, I'm just telling you, man, that's the next thing they're going to do.
Your heart rate is too high. An extra $5 to go toward health care?
You seem to have a good job, stable life. You have to pay 75 cents more.
Yeah. You have very soft hands, sir. You must work in accounting.
Does it not cost any extra money? Like if you went up to Montrose Beach or Oak Street Beach?
I don't know what the beach is. I mean, there's a set price that they're supposed to be. And you go there and you're like, geez. Like downtown is always going to be $4 an hour anyway.
Yeah.
But now they're doing the kind of thing like around tourist destinations like Wrigley Field. I'm saying it's only a matter of time until they do it at places
7-day
like the beaches.
Parking instead of, you know, Sundays off.
Yeah, that's
like
they
that.
Already.
Yeah.
That are. I mean, it's funny. We're such grandpas. To be like, you better pay on Sunday? Because everyone who's in 5 years from now, they're like, yeah, of course, that's what you do.
Yeah.
No, that's no thing. And I'm, you know, I think of all the, I mean, it can go so deep on this. I had all the jewel bags, and then now I don't get because it's 7 cents.
Yeah.
And then you put it over the parking meter, the old parking meter, and tie it and be like,
busted.
It's busted.
But yeah. Now you have to do a regular bag.
Yeah, now I'm trying to break my app on my phone.
See if that works. How about the sugary drink? What
am I going to do about that? Yeah.
Oh, don't get me started.
I'm going to be arguing just for fun, just to flummox the local cashier. I'm going to pick a Crystal Light that fits under but I'm just going to argue about what's a sweetened drink. Like, that'll be my new thing at
every
the Jewel.
Well, it wasn't it Fritchie last week that brought up if you go to the soda fountain, like at the gas station, let's say you get the 30-ounce yeah. Big Gulp, which you put in, it's half full of ice, you're not getting a full 30
yeah,
ounces.
Yeah, right.
But you're getting taxed a penny.
For the
an
ice.
An extra penny.
You're right.
For the drink.
What about, has this you're been right, brought up about when you go to the Starbucks and get, the Frappuccino with all the chocolate
yeah, they,
and all that
I don't
kind
think,
of stuff? Like,
I don't
why
think
is
they
that
fit,
not?
They don't fit into that. I don't know. Yeah. Frou-frou drink.
But you know, some aldermen's listening right now and going,
yeah, that's the frou-frou drink tax.
I heard on WGN last night.
It would be this. They'll put the
unicorn Frappuccino. Yeah. We could have made millions
right,
out of that thing.
Yeah.
This is the problem with our society. Society. Frou-frou drinks. 815 got the best. It said event parking at Soldier Field for Metallica. And I don't know where the city. It was $49 to park. Soldier Field for Metallica. Is that the city? I guess that would be the city. It's a park district, right? District owns that lot. So they're just jacking it up. Jacking for beats. Give me a break. $49. At what point is someone like, yeah, I think 49 is good. Like, once some guy in some office is like, I don't know, I think it's too high, Joe. He's like, no, I think they'll pay for 49.
Yeah, because at 50, people are going to drive on by.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's try it. Let's try 49 and see what happens. I also want to know, does Metallica, did they write that in their contracts? We also get $15 of the parking. They probably did. So it's all jacked up to give Lars.
I hope so. Exactly. I'd rather have my money go to Metallica than to fill potholes.
All the money they lost.
It's more
on
entertaining.
Yeah. All the free downloads that they lost back in the 2000s. All right, coming up, we're going to talk with the Districts, the band, indie rock band from Pennsylvania. They're playing Lollapalooza this weekend. And Kwaku Collins coming in, Studio 435. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, we continue our Lollapalooza week here in the Download, featuring some of the great musicians coming to Chicago for the weekend. And tonight we talk to the Districts. Districts are an indie rock outfit from the Philadelphia area. They're coming to town to play Lala on Saturday, but they're also going to get a show in before at the Vic Friday night. The Districts are an up-and-coming band who signed to Fat Possum Records a couple years back, and they're getting rave reviews for what's been pre-released from their upcoming album called Popular Manipulations. It's out in August. It'll be their third album. Joining me on the line, Braden Lawrence. He's the drummer for the Districts. Braden, welcome to the Download.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Talk about coming through Chicago. I mean, obviously, there's coming through Chicago, and then there's playing Lollapalooza.
Yeah. So we played Lollapalooza once before a few years ago, And it was great. One of the first, like, major festivals we've ever played. And it was great. I think our sound went off for a second, which was scary. But other than that, it was very fun.
For you, as a band who tours regularly and plays all sorts of different venues, including big festivals like this, do you have to change the way you approach your show when you're on stage at a festival like Lollapalooza?
Yeah, I guess we change the set list. If we're doing a club show, we try and do more dynamic changes. We'll, like, do a really loud song and then do a few quiet songs. But for festivals, just keeping it rocking for the most part.
It's just loud songs, right?
Yeah, basically. I guess we haven't... This will be, like, the first festival. We're not really doing that many festivals this year, so I guess I don't really know what we're going to play. But I guess we'll
figure it out, right? I don't know if you talked about this before, but the kind of music that you play, I mean, there is this... You definitely want to connect with the emotion of the audience, of course. And when you're in small venues, that's easier to do than when you're playing, you know, seas of people where you can't necessarily tell if they like it or not.
Yeah, it can be tough, for sure, to catch, like... the general atmosphere of the crowd. It's definitely a different beast, something that we're still, I guess, kind of getting used to. It's a way different thing.
A lot of buzz around Popular Manipulation's coming out, obviously the tour as well, and having a chance to promote it right now is at Lollapalooza and other places like the Vic in Chicago. How different is Popular Manipulations from the two albums you guys have done before?
I guess it's different. I guess it doesn't seem that different to us because... Well, I guess, yeah, it is different, I guess. We toured after our last album, Flourish in the Swirl, came out. We basically just, like, toured nonstop for, like, a year and a half. But then we basically had what turned into, like, a year of just writing and really focusing on making a record, which, as a band, it's always been just trying to play as many shows as possible and moving forward as a band in that aspect of just making connections and playing live as much as we could. But for this, we really, like, focused on the songs and had, like, probably like 40 to 50 songs that we had to choose from. So it was a way different experience than the last album.
Is that by design? I mean, was it the idea that you wanted to try something different with this third album?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we just wanted to really make the best album we could make. So, you know, there was a lot of trial and error, that we went through to get to what, you know, we decided the final product to be. We were definitely a lot more critical and thought way more about it. And lyrically, Robbie, it, like, changed his approach and was doing more, like, narrative rather than, you know, first person stuff. So there's different styles in that too. And musically, it's a little different, I guess. We took a lot more time on it. So I guess it's just a little more fleshed out, in my opinion, yeah, than the last two records.
Braden Lawrence is my guest. He's a drummer for The Districts. They're on stage at Lollapalooza on Saturday. You guys have been together since high school. That's one of the strengths of a band, is to have longevity in a way that you can play next to each other. Some members have changed up here and there, but the core group has, you guys have been playing together. Is that a strength for you guys? I mean, as you guys grow and have, you know, want to try new things together, you've been with each other for so long, whether it be, you know, growing up together or on the road in tight quarters, that you guys have to have that trust to be able to reach out and try something new.
Yeah, for sure. We definitely, because we all play different kinds of music and have different side projects other than The Districts. So it's like, for us, it isn't that big of a shock.
The idea of playing in side projects, and you guys have been able to do that and still be The Districts, how important is it to have another creative outlet and not just be one band?
Yeah, I think it's very important just to grow as artists and just be able to not put everything in one basket. I mean, it's definitely what we focus on the most, but, you know, being in a band that tours all the time can definitely be stressful just because, you know, there's way more aspects to being in a touring band with, like, labels and stuff that with, like, side projects that are just strictly for making music and putting it out and, you know, whatever. It's, mm-hmm, like, way less pressure, which I think is extremely important for any artist to just do more than one thing. Very helpful for us, at least, to, you know, keep our heads above water and be able to try different things to, like, experiment and not have to feel like we have to make the same record every time and,
yeah, right,
just be like, oh, they're this kind of band. So I think it's very important for us to try different things.
You guys have a national following at this point, and obviously there's a lot of anticipation for Popular Manipulations. The tracks that are out right now are getting heavy rotation. But as a Philadelphia based band, meaning you've only been there for 2 years. How important is it for you guys to be known as a Philly band? I don't know much about the rock scene in Philadelphia, but how important is it for you guys to sort of be stamped a Philly band?
I don't think it matters terribly much to us. I mean, there's a great scene and there's like so many great bands. I guess we've lived here for about 4 years, so I guess it's definitely shaped us in that way. But there's like a really big DIY scene, which is great, but we've always kind of been on the outskirts of it to some extent. But I mean, we are a Philadelphia band and we love a lot of Philly bands that, I mean, definitely happy to be lumped together with. Yeah. For sure.
Well, having the opportunity to be on Fat Possum, which is a famed record label, which not a Philadelphia record label, but what's that mean to you guys to be associated with a brand like that with Fat Possum, especially as you get ready to release what could be your biggest record?
We really respect their label. I mean, Matthew, the owner, started as like a 20-year-old kid just going to like blues musicians' doorsteps and just like recording these blues guys. So we respect them. They have so many cool bands right now, and they reissue a lot of cool stuff. Yeah, definitely a good family to be a part of.
Braden Lawrence is the drummer for the band The Districts. They're playing Lollapalooza coming up this weekend, Saturday. They'll also be at the Vic on Friday night. Braden, thanks so much for taking some time out and talking to us tonight. We appreciate it. Good luck with the shows.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, coming up, Studio 435, Kwaku Collins, hip-hop artist who will be performing live in the 10 o'clock hour. He will be at Lollapalooza coming up on Thursday. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for Chicago. I don't get out to Lollapalooza. I've only been to one Lollapalooza in my life. Actually, I take that back, too. I went to one at Alpine Valley, which would have been the second year. The year this was Pearl Jam, Ice Cube. How great is that? Ministry, which scared the hell out of me. You imagine a wannabe alternative kid at 18 being like, I want to go Lollapalooza, but I don't know if I have a flannel to tie around my waist. Oh, thanks, Dad. Get up there and then you get to Ministry and you're like, what's this Chicago band? Oh, it's Dusk. They go right on at Dusk on purpose. And it was just like the scare. It turned into... I've never thought of, I don't have any memories in my memory bank of the moment where you think that hell is upon us. Except for Ministry at Lollapalooza. Because it was, you know, I was in the lawn and they started a big mosh pit, but it was really circular. And it just was at dusk. They did it on purpose. I guess they wanted to go on at dusk and their light show and everything. It just was a very scary vibe. Great band, but very scary vibe. And then Red Hot Chili Peppers, of course, finish it out. But then I got the good fortune of being in Lollapalooza. I was with Schadenfreude, where we were a comedy. They had a comedy stage at one point where they were trying that out. Did not work. It was the area in which the parents who accompanied their kids or the people who just had too much went to chill, was to watch the comedy. So you were you were essentially performing to like either parents on bleachers who were like, this is really dumb, or people spread out, hippies spread out on the grass, like just needing like dehydrated.
Yeah, that's not a good comedy audience. Yeah.
You don't really, you're on your third joke and the EMTs are like trying to put water in the hippie's mouth and you're like, okay, this is, but hey, it was a free ticket to Lollapalooza.
Yeah. And you can forever say that you played Lollapalooza.
That's right. And I remember we did a bit where we had the Ed Buss tumblers, and the bit was I had played this Alderman Ed Buss, and he was going to Lollapalooza and he brought his Ed Buss tumblers so they could have an experience, kind of like the Jesse White tumblers. Mm-hmm. But they were not. We did push-ups and Andrew DeWitt, who's a hilarious comedian in L.A. now, just stood in the middle and he was just eating ice cream out of like a huge container while everyone was like doing push-ups and stuff around him. And that was the bit, like, that the Ed Buss tumblers weren't really good at it. But the best part about it was that we wanted to do this bit, and we had like 9 or 10 people that needed to be part of that group. And it was a bit of a conundrum, because Lollapalooza is like, we're not giving
getting
you passes
in,
for
yeah.
9 people to get in. And we're like, yeah, but it's part of the bit. You need a tumblers. So like, we were able somehow to get them in, and they got free Lollapalooza tickets to essentially just come out and pretend like they were tumblers, like bad tumblers. And that was the year that Kanye West was on, and we watched Kanye in the back, and it was my favorite moment of all time, where he was having a lot of sound problems.
Oh, no. Kind
of, yeah. Like, it's just because who brings like an 80-piece orchestra to the, you know, to start off Diamonds.
Diamond from Sierra
yeah.
Leone.
So he starts with that song, and he's got the orchestra on stage, and it's not mic'd right. Like, they're trying so hard to get it right. And, like, by song two, he kind of, like, stops one of the songs in the middle. You know, the DJ stops for a second, and he goes, hold up. He goes, I'm back in my hometown. And you guys F up my sound. And the whole crowd goes crazy, like, boo, Chicago. Look at the union guys on the side being like, keep talking.
Yeah.
Keep talking. Like, I was just like, I don't know how.
Nobody's rushing around to do anything.
No, it was a showdown between Kanye West and the guys setting up the stage at Lollapalooza. It was brilliant. And I read a little tidbit, I think, in Zwecker or Sneed the next day that said Kanye was supposed to show up to some Sun Ra party, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't because the inside sources say he was too upset with what happened at his performance.
Wow.
It was a great show, but it was like, we wouldn't even have noticed. It was like,
if he didn't call it out,
yeah, he had to make a big deal out of it, which was kind of annoying. And this was way before, but he brought Twista up, you know, he brought all the Chicago people up on stage, just like Chance is going to do on Saturday. I think that's great.
Yeah, that's going to be great.
I think the fun thing about Lollapalooza on Saturday will be what Chance does, right?
Do they stream it, I wonder? Because that was the thing about Pitchfork is, like, you know, I like to go from, like, 1 to, like, 4 p.m. in the afternoon. And then for all the, you know, all the big stuff, I like to just get back on the deck, open up the old computer, and check it, and just stream it. Pretend I'm there. So I don't know if they, because that would be amazing if they did that.
They probably do, right? Because they want to get as many people on that, because they probably sell ads on that stream. I don't know. I wonder, you know, a lot of what Chance does, he has a lot of features on his work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about all the people who guest on a Chance the Rapper track, especially on Coloring Book. And so you can't go out there and do no problems without 2 Chainz and Lil Wayne, can you? Maybe. Maybe you can. But I just think at Lollapalooza, maybe on your regular tour you can do it. But at Lollapalooza, don't you have to bring those guys out?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's hard when you're –
when you get such a big – and he's such a showman, you know. Yeah. He'd, I mean, I'm sure he wants to, you know.
Yeah.
Just
– I mean, you can make an argument for a lot of guys who have been on a lot of tracks. Jamila Woods and Sunday Candy. You know, maybe we see Jamila. She's Close Sessions. Who's coming – Quake, who's coming up. I mean, maybe they can tell us.
I felt that at Pitchfork – when I went to see Joey Perp, another guy that we've had on, another hip-hop guy that we've had on here.
Great, yeah.
He has that that one song with Chance. He might have a few songs with Chance, but the one that came out like last summer, Girls or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I felt like the people were waiting because he had a lot of people. He had Vic Mensa was up there. He had a lot of Tokyo was up there, a lot of good, you know, local guys. And I'm like, are we waiting for Chance to come out? And then, but Chance never came out.
Oh,
And then the next band was Pine Grove, and then all of a sudden I'm like, wow, a lot of people like Pine Grove. But then I realized it was because there was a cancellation. Jamila Woods was supposed to be on the small little blue stage.
Oh.
And it was really crowded. I'm like, wow, a lot of people like this rootsy Pine Grove band from New Jersey. But I realized that they had somebody canceled and they moved Jamila to the green stage.
Oh, I see.
So people are already there, they were rushing to get in. And I was like, oh, I think these people don't know that Jamila has been moved to the.
All right. Well, coming up, Kwaku Collins. He's going to be live in Studio 435 tonight. Very excited. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN, and it's time for Studio 435, our weekly showcase of the best live music Chicago has to offer right here in our beautiful Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. It's Lollapalooza week here in the Download, so we're featuring some of the great bands and artists that will be on stage in Grant Park this weekend, and that includes Evanston-based hip-hop artist Kwaku Collins. Collins was in studio with us about a year ago. When his album Nat Love came out, Kwaku is one of the stars on Chicago's Closed Sessions record label, and he is on stage Thursday at Lolla. Kwaku Collins, welcome back to the Download. Good to see you.
What is good? Good to see you too.
So last time we talked, you know, first of all, before we get anything, I mean, what's it mean to play Lollapalooza? I mean, to be able to be on this huge festival in a town in an area that you grew up in, what does it mean to you?
Oh, it's like every cliche in the book. It applies so specifically here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to take the train to my set and all these different, you know, like dreams that I've had since I was a kid are kind of happening. It's a lot to process.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Have you been to Lollapalooza before? Have you gone to different festivals?
I went to Pitchfork a few times in the last couple of years. In the last like 3 years, I started going to Pitchfork. And then I went to Lollapalooza one time last year. But that was the only time I've ever gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for you being a hip hop artist, I mean, to get up on a stage like that, where you're playing, in festival style, where the stages are crisscrossed from each other. There's a lot of audiences there that are there maybe for the vibe, but not necessarily for you. And it's a sea of people that you can't necessarily see respond. How do you handle, that kind of show as opposed to something, you know, in a small club?
I mean, I feel like if that's the vibe, you know, if people are just there for a vibe, then I'm good for that. You know what I mean? Because it's just like a wave. You know what I mean? Waves are waves, and I'm pretty well versed in my wave. You know what I mean? Wavy begets wavy. You know what
do
I mean?
You have to change your set when you're thinking about a show like that? Or there's some stuff you're not going to do that you would do at Metro that you're not going to do at Lolla?
For festival sets, it's more about energy. You know what I mean? With like a Metro set that I'm fully like, I can coordinate this like a plot, you know what I mean? It can have a low point for the beginning and the introductory, and then it can rise up to the crescendo at the you know, the apex of where we're at, and then it can come back down and we can, you know, breathe it out. And then, but for this, it's like high energy the whole way through, and then let's like chill out and and let whatever we're on, whatever wave we're on, kind of wash over us and then bring it back up again.
Do you feel, you know, for Lollapalooza to be on, and I think of the last couple of years of Lollapalooza, there's been more and more attention made to Chicago hip-hop. And even this year, I mean, Chance's is the headliner.
Yeah.
But it was last year, I think it was Vic Mensa the year before. And, I mean, there's a lot of different people who've been on that stage at Lollapalooza. Do you recognize that as a kid from here, that Chicago hip-hop is not only represented, but it seems to almost be the spotlight at some of these festivals?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and rightfully so. You know, it's about time Chicago got its shine. You know what I mean? It's overdue.
For you, let's talk about the success of Nat Love, because when we talked a year, it was May of last year, you were just putting that record out.
Yeah.
I mean, and this was something that you were working on as your first LP, a lot of it you mixed yourself and put together. How does it feel to have now toured it and worked it for a year and you know, sort of grown into the record?
It's been, I was thinking about it actually today. Just, it's interesting. A lot of the stuff that I talked about, there were kind of specific lines that I wrote that I heard in a certain song. And I'm like, wow, that's still true in ways that I wasn't even aware of when I wrote them. You know what I mean? And they apply to my life now, so it'll be interesting to see. I'm just interested to see how this body of work, how I look at it when I'm like 30 or when I'm 40 or when I'm 50. You know, how other people will look at it when they're, can it last that long? Will it, even if it's like an underground kind of, you know what I mean? Like, will people still
be paying attention? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'll tell you right now, what's going to happen is that the first thing that's going to happen is that the format will not work on whatever your player is. So you're not going to be able to listen to it. It's happened to me. I'm 42 years old, and I feel like everything I ever taped creatively, I'm like, oh, it's a VHS. I don't know what to do with this. It's on a Sony 8. It's on an 8? Okay. So, yeah, you're going to have to work that out, the platform on that. But, I mean, for you, I mean, you're 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we talked, you were 19. I mean, you've had such a great career at such a young age. You know, how does that play? I mean, do you feel 20? I mean, for the last year, you're touring around, you're doing things. I mean, do you, you're already put out an album. You know what I mean? Like, you're at a certain point where I don't know. I know a lot of 20ers, or I was 20, and I don't feel like I had those kind of things under my belt.
Nah, I think it's less that, like, I feel 20, more is, and he can attest to this, actually, they both can, is I act 20. You know what I mean? Like, just, I'm fully still 20. You know what I mean? Like, I'm definitely about to turn 21. And you can tell more in my actions, maybe not in my demeanor, which are kind of synonymous, but I feel 20 in some ways, especially when they're like, wow, you're super 20. But, but no, for the most part, I just kind of like feel like a,
What's the plan? I mean, for you, is it to continue making music, to continue to work? I mean, you're going to put out another album and keep moving forward in the music industry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really all I can do. It's either like do this or find something else to do, but I can't really do anything else either. That's the it's this or flounder.
Well, this is the time of your life in which you build those skills, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why people go to college and do other things. Yeah. So, I mean, would you find yourself saying, you know, because there's a lot of artists we've talked to on the show that say, well, you know, I'm doing this and this is great and this is an awesome experience and I'm being creative artistically, but I also am thinking about what I'm going to do in my future. I'm not always going to rest on my laurels that I'm a great artist, right?
Yeah. No, I've definitely, like, thought about other things I would like to do, and there are lots of things that I would like to do. I would love to direct film. I think that would be a lot of fun. I think creative writing could be a really fun venture to go in. I also think just more kind of getting more involved in community outside of having just like a name.
Right.
I mean, I think there's something to be said for just focusing on being a member of your community first. So things like that. Not that I'm already not trying to be an active member of my community.
No, I get it.
But more more so like that's I got a job.
I was not thinking about being an active community member when I was 20. There's no way that ever came up. Kwaku Collins in studio with me tonight, the hip-hop artist, Evanston-based hip-hop artist who is playing Lollapalooza coming up on Thursday. We're going to hear some live music in just a moment. For you, I mean, when we were on last time, we talked a little bit about what it means to be from a place. I mean, because it's a Chicago hip-hop scene, mm-hmm. and you were Closed Sessions, which has got a lot of Chicago artists.
Yeah.
But you were raised in Evanston.
Yeah.
So talk about that. I mean, do you still consider yourself Evanston-based, even mm-hmm. though you are synonymous with so much Chicago mm-hmm. hip-hop?
Yeah, because it's like, I live in Evanston. You know what I mean? There's a discernible difference to people from Evanston and to people from Chicago, you know what I mean? And, I am well aware that every time I do a show in Chicago, or every time I step into a studio in Chicago, or every time I step into somebody's house in Chicago, I'm in somebody else's space. You know what I mean? Every time I cross over the border of like Evanston and Chicago,
yeah,
I'm in somebody else's space, and people have been kind enough to welcome me into their spaces, especially me doing what other people are trying to do as far as just being an artist, but more specifically a vocalist and a producer. And I just try to remain very conscious of that, and to say that I am from Chicago just means that that's just such like an obvious and clumsy way to step on those people's toes, and to kind of it seems very opportunist, you know.
Right.
I've been able to, you know, kind of surf this wave.
But they, I mean, they're going to call you Chicago hip hop artist when you're up on stage at Lollapalooza. I mean, they're going to go.
And when I'm given the mic, I'm going to say I'm from Evanston. You know what I mean? And that's just, I can't account for what other people are going to say, but that's how I feel about Chicago.
That's interesting, because I mean, Evanston and Chicago have such a interesting relationship because they're so close in proximity.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you're from Evanston, there is this pride that you're North Howard Street. You're not necessarily a Chicagoan.
Yeah, man. It's just one of those things. You know what I mean? It's
like, can you tell I don't know if you can, but is there a difference in the sound that's being produced that close in proximity? I mean, could you tell the difference between someone who came up through Evanston and is either lyrically or sonically than, say, somebody in Humboldt Park or in...
Because Tame Impala sound like the Beatles. You know what I mean? They're not from Liverpool. You dig what I'm saying? But I think like when you dig into the when you start analyzing content and stuff like mm-hmm. that, then I think you could
probably pull it out if you wanted to.
You could probably. But that's hard to say, you know what I mean? Because some people you can and some people you can't, you know what I mean? Like if you listen to my music and you dig deep enough, you can hear references to streets in Evanston or to places in Evanston or just being, you know, going east towards the lake. You know what I mean? That's a Chicago thing too, but that's also an Evanston thing.
I think Chicago's had such a long history in hip hop of mm-hmm. being this sort of politically and socially conscious in this way that the backpack rap kind of mm-hmm. Lupe Fiasco, mm-hmm. a Common, the sort of Kanye West even early, like that's the kind of sound that you would get from Chicago. Whether that's what they wanted to do, that's just how they kind of fit in. And it's almost like that was a Chicago artist at the time. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that way? Can as a young artist now, can you say, oh, that's when you hear Vic Mensa or you hear Chance or anyone else, you're like, oh, I can tell they're from Chicago based on the way that they flow or the way that their music is set up differently than the rest around the country?
Nah, because now it's at a point where like everybody make music like everybody. You know what I mean?
Right. Dudes from internet changes it. Yeah.
Dudes from Cali sound like they come from Atlanta. People from Chicago sound like the people from Atlanta sound like they come from Chicago. People from Detroit sound like they're from New York. You know what I mean? But
is that a good thing?
I mean, it's cool. Cause like, you know, if the shoe fits, you know what I mean? It don't really matter what the boat look like. It's the motion in the ocean. You know what I mean? but I think,
yes,
when
that's
you,
a, that's a, That's good.
I think when you look at artists like Chance and like Vic again, and then through the lineage of Chicago, through Kanye and Common and Lupe Fiasco, and even further into people like, you know what I'm saying, Crucial Conflict and Kids in the Hall, people that I've been just recently like put onto in the last few years because I didn't know about the history that far. And I'm completely, even in saying that, there's history back before that I'm not touching on, but I think you get the point. It's definitely stylistically it's things about the way that they do things that are Chicago, but a lot of it is in the content, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I think makes the geographical location of music and of the artist pop out. You know what I mean? It's just what these dudes are talking about. And a lot of what they're talking about is what's going on the south and the west side of the city. You
know? Right. And I would assume that a lot of those things, we had Lil Bibby and G Herbo in studio, and they talked about a lot of the same stuff that someone in Atlanta or Miami or California are rapping about their environment or their streets. It's, you'd say that's Chicago as well. Mm. I mean, when you talk about drill, it's the same concept that it's just we've found a way to somehow discern one particular sound from the other. But just like you said, it's really hard to do that now. Mm-hmm. Everybody's doing the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. But at the same time, then people are doing things that nobody's ever heard before.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Kwaku Collins is in studio with me tonight. The hip-hop artist from Evanston is going to be at Lollapalooza on Thursday. We're going to hear Kwaku Collins live in Studio 435 right after the break.
Yeah.
The album is Nat Love. You can find it all over the place, iTunes, Spotify, all that. But Kwaku Collins live in studio coming up right after the break. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Time for Studio 435 in studio tonight. Before he plays Lollapalooza, he plays right here. Kwaku Collins, the Evanston-based hip-hop artist who a year ago put out the album Nat Love. He will be at Lollapalooza on Thursday. Or like I said, he is here at Studio 435 right now. Here is the track, Stupid Rose. Take it away, guys.
Yeah, stupid roses. Hey, you should get a piece of paper and write my Instagram on it and put it on the window. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If I'm a rapper, she's a savage. Hey, I would sit behind her in my classes. Like, I used to love her something stupid. What? Stupid. I used to love her something stupid. Yeah, I don't know if I remember where she live now. And even so, it's not as if we would've fit, oh. Cause she was wild, I was different, we was kids then. And this was way before my love for Kanoa now. And I was waiting on a ride that never did show. And I debated back and forth among my kinfolk. But see, these roses turn from red to black again now. You stupid roses, I done told you, cut that hate out, you stupid roses. Huh. You roses, I say you stupid roses, yeah. Hey, you roses, I say you stupid roses. You roses, I say you stupid roses. And in the live version, we shake our shoulders, you know, like this. And all these people are looking at me out the window with no context. There's no rhythmic context to what I'm doing right now.
But them shoulders going crazy. But them shoulders.
I want one person to do it. They all just like, hey, if I'm a rapper, then she's a savage. Not that she isn't. Oh, that's just invalid. Like, I used to try to never do this. And yeah, I do this. But everything I tried was useless. I caught the contact again. And I called the contact for more. But I caught the call, call it out. And I cut the signal, come on. You better send the satellite off. Airplane mode, that yo. Ay, you'll be rollercoasting cold if you ever grow that rose. Ay, that rose, hey.
like I got a girl. So I can't be messing with you, no, no. But maybe magnetic is our only MO. I never did level with mine, huh. Till she sat across me, my curiosity coiled like a snake around a finger. Like another bouquet of these roses trying to duck the motion, but it know me better. A missile crisis shoot me out to blue and blend me in the red, cause she can read me too. She'll never tell her soul, but someone beat her to it. Sam, Rome was lost, but it was not a ruin. Ruin, rah, rah, anyway, I just stand there holding a dozen of these roses. Yo, these stupid, stupid roses. You roses, I say you stupid roses. You roses, I say you stupid, stupid roses. You roses, I say you stupid roses. Roses, ay, shoulder, ay, roses. You stupid roses. Oh, you stupid roses. Hey, hey, yeah, you stupid roses. Oh, you stupid roses. Yeah, you stupid, stupid.
Hey. Yeah. Yeah. There we go. Quaker Collins in studio tonight. Studio 435 here. Right in our beautiful Allstate Showcase studio, Michigan Avenue. People watching out there. You were good. There any shimmies, any shoulder shimmies going on out there?
No, I didn't see any shoulder shimmies. It was cool. They didn't have no beat.
All right. Quaker Collins in studio 435. We're going to get a couple more songs from him coming up here right after the news. He is going to be playing at Lollapalooza coming up. The Evanston-based hip-hop artist put out his album Nat Love last year. He was in studio here in the Download about a year ago talking about that album. The album is out on Spotify, iTunes, places like that. He's one of the stars on Chicago's Closed Sessions record label. And like I said, he is going to be on stage at Lollapalooza coming up on Thursday. It's got a pre-Lala show on Wednesday night as well. We'll talk about that coming up as well right after the news here on the Download. Like I said, Kwaku Collins in studio tonight. We'll have more of that coming up. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Studio 435 time, our weekly showcase of the best live music Chicago has to offer right here in our Allstate Showcase studio. Beautiful Michigan Avenue. It's Lollapalooza week. So we're featuring some of the great bands and artists that are going to be on stage in Grant Park this weekend. And that includes Evanston-based hip-hop artist Kwaku Collins. He was in studio for about a year ago for the album premiere, Nat Love. He's one of the stars on Chicago's Closed Sessions record label, and he's going to be on stage Thursday at Lala. And he is in studio right now, and he is ready to perform again. Here's the track, Ghost. Take it away, guys.
It's very spooky. Very spooky, no Casper. Wheezy, no asthma, but I got asthma. Look around. Tell me, what do you see? A shadow sits in a corner. Don't move, just let it be, just leave it there. It ain't really moving some weeks, but we ain't moving no week. Let's just pray that it's asleep, yeah. This feeling takes over the room. It's kinda hard not to see, possibly easier now that the light has grown dull and fluorescent. It flickers, it's all confirmation that leverage was left in the west wing. This is the east. I never did mean to neglect the beast. By the retreat, they just might come back, but by the retreat, they just gone come for me. I think I've seen a ghost. They're like, what you expect? Right there out your window. Just right there out your window. Like however amount of days, it's gotta be a way. Yeah.
Just right there out your window.
Yeah. What? Boo. Thinking maybe I'm mistaken this all. Rethink that, read it back, how that sound to you. Reel it back, I evaluate my resolve. The shape in the corner is still yet to move. We scrape it to cray, we mark up all the walls. I'm barely a beast, I just need to get loose. Before we sufficiently close on these thoughts, I repeat them once in my head for the use. Oh, yeah, I'ma find what I've been looking for. Love aside, what am I looking for? Yeah, what other side underworld, what do I? With this megaphone, I call killing wrong. With my own eyes, I watch it go. In the foreground, here lies it all. In the real ground, if you really know life.
I never thought I'd see the day. They're like, what you expect? Right there out your window. Hey, just right there out your window. Yeah, yeah. If all the hours in a day, oh, it's gotta be a way. Yeah. Just right there out your window. Oh, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's two.
That's two, yeah. Blakey Collins in studio 435 tonight. Also spinning tonight, backing him up, Boathouse in studio. Good to see you, too. Good to see you.
Likewise.
Just come on, take a seat, and we'll talk. He's going to put up the Instagram for everybody out there. That's great. Kwaku Collins will be at Lollapalooza coming up on Thursday. He is also going to be at Concord Music Hall coming up on Wednesday. That's a sold-out show with Kay Trinata. That's a big show. You excited about that one? That's big.
Yeah.
Sold out. I love it.
I'm pumped.
I mean, for you to... It's interesting because I want to get into your style, your vocal style, because you definitely have a very unique sound. I mean, and you can go, as we heard in the first song, you can go high energy and then you can also break it down. Where are you finding yourself evolving as an artist? I mean, we talked a year ago having you on the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you finding yourself as you start working on new music, really testing the limits of what you've done in the past and kind of pushing for something new?
Oh, yeah. I mean... If I ever stop doing that, then I'm not really doing my job. You know what I mean? But yeah, I'm always looking to push my boundaries, you know, personally and artistically, and also just not for like art as a whole. You know what I mean? Because I don't really think I'm like doing anything for art necessarily. But I think that when I do kind of, there are times when I do step to the mic or, you know, sit down to make a beat that I'm like, let me try to do something that nobody does.
Is it hard? I mean, I always ask artists this, especially once they're somewhat accomplished. I mean, you're 20 years old, but, you know, and you've already put out your own album. And like you said, you're playing Lollapalooza. You're going to be at the show at Concord coming up on Wednesday, sold out. Mm-hmm. When you get to that point as an artist, a 20-year-old, where the flow that you're going for isn't necessarily working yet, or the beat that you're trying to produce isn't exactly what you want to come out of your head, how do you push through that? I mean, because does it get, when you're an artist that you want your MO to be, I'm going to do something that nobody else is doing, I would assume that gets hard when you're pushing yourself to the limit in which you may not be able to do what you want your body to do.
It gets very frustrating, and I think all creatives in every field it's just writer's block, you know what I mean? And it's, you know, Boathouse gets it, producer's block, you know what I mean, and beat block, I get it, Odd Couple gets it, he's on Close Sessions, you know, Webb gets writer's block all the time, I get writer's block, and Bridges has periods where he doesn't shoot anything, or the edits that he's working on aren't flowing the way that they should, and it's really just about figuring out what you need, you know what I mean? Sometimes you need to lock in, and sometimes you need to get out, you dig? So sometimes I need to just like punch through, and sometimes I need to just go home and start over. You know,
being in the with the Closed Session family, and you just mentioned a lot of the artists that are on it. How much does it help to be part of that collective? I mean, to be in a position where you have musicians and producers and videographer directors all in the same room, but when you are in that point where you want to try something new, how important is it to have a collective around you?
It's like just in the way of trying something new. I look at it in two different ways. I think it is important to have, a collective behind you that is behind you. So when you do go to do something that is sonically or, stylistically adventurous, then you have this support system that you can kind of fall back on. Conversely, there is something to be said for being somewhat of a lone wolf, and I'm not saying that I am, but I'm just saying that keeping things reserved is also a good thing when you're trying to do new things, just because, you know, then they, you know, I'm a big advocate for keeping things close to the belt.
I was going to say, does that play into how you collaborate with other artists? I mean, because you have a lot of features, and, you know, I remember on the record, I just remember Taylor was on the record, mm-hmm. and others were as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you collaborative in nature, where you will take your beats and your art and say, hey, I'm going to throw this to Boathouse or to others and say, all right, let's make something else out of it?
Definitely. I mean, like, right now and for the last few months, I'm not really around them when I'm making music anymore, because I usually just go to the studio at night when nobody's there.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why do you do that? Just because? You like that vibe better?
I do like the night vibes. That's a lot of fun. Also, just because Soundscape Studios is a fully functioning recording studio commercially outside of closed sessions. And so they're solidly booked, you know, most days from 9 a.m. or 10 a.m.
So your only option to get in and mess around would be at night. Anyway.
Exactly. Early in the morning or at night. Yeah. But yeah,
like that as an artist. You're more of a guy who's like, hey, I'm going to wake up late and I'm going to go in and stay overnight kind of thing.
Definitely. I also do like getting up in the morning and having like my coffee and making a song. I think I make some of my...
So I guess what we figured out, sleep is out. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Sleep is for the day.
Right. But I mean, so back to the idea of collaborating. Mm-hmm. When you're in studio and your hours are as they are, mm-hmm. you're right. There's probably not a lot of human beings around at that time.
Yeah.
So how do you collaborate when you hold such crazy hours and the artists aren't necessarily with you when you're doing it?
Well, the internet is awesome. Shout out Gmail. Dropbox is sick. But, I mean, you know, artists are artists, you know what I'm saying? My schedule is not a particularly unique schedule for somebody in my field.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Bridges doesn't go to bed ever. I go to bed by 3 most mornings. Bridges don't go to sleep until like 6 a.m. daily with work at 11. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, my grind is the tip of the iceberg, you dig?
But I mean, okay, so let me ask you about the artists that you work with at closed session, and, mm-hmm. and you're a young guy there, and I mean, it's a young crew, but mm-hmm. a lot of them, Dura's experience there, and you talked about Bridges and others that you work with.
Yeah.
What are you learning from being around these guys? These guys that do have the hustle and the drive and are creating on a constant basis.
Man, I learned so much from everybody, really, but like Mike Kolar, who's sitting right here, mm-hmm. so it's weird to just like say his name without pointing to him. He masters all my records, and I try to mix them to like what I want them to sound like, and then he takes it, you know, when it's out of like when I'm like, all right, I've done all I can do. He's like, well, I'm gonna do it way better. So I just, in sitting with him in hours of mixing and mastering my own records, watching what he was doing, you know, sometimes I'd be asleep, but sometimes I'd be like really, really, really watching. And so I learned a lot about, you know, compressors and automation and, you know, passes and stuff like that. And then from Boathouse, you know how in a lot of like, in a lot of hip hop songs nowadays, the 808 always goes like boom, like it's got that glide to
sure,
it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I wouldn't know how to do that without him. You dig what I'm saying? I wouldn't have learned how to make my beats huge and like expansive and take up space.
And we
if
don't,
I
and
been
we don't,
couple.
We're only, it's only, I guess, part of what we're talking about. But I mean, you do create your own beats, you produce mm-hmm. your own music, and you have this group around you that can help you and also finish the job. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we've only talked about you just being an artist on the microphone. We've heard your Studio 435. Mm. Yeah, you're learning constantly about how to make the actual track mm-hmm. better.
Yeah. No, I'm always like, my father has been a percussionist since he was 18 years old, and he's 67 now. And to this day, you know, he's like a proud man. You know what I mean? When he thinks he's the ish at something, he's going to say it and be like, no, I'm perfect at making these biscuits right here. You dig? But with percussion, that's one thing. That's like the love of his life, you dig, outside of like family. But he'll still tell me to this day, like, I'm never done getting good at this. You know, I'm never done learning new techniques and new rhythms and new ways to move my hands and new ways to train myself and to you know, more complexities. And he's never done.
Right.
And he's, you know what I mean? He's an OG. So if I'm 20, you know, what I look like saying,
yeah, right,
I'm good. I don't need to work on my writing. I don't need to read books and try to, you know what I'm saying? I don't need to listen to that. I don't need to watch this dude do that. I don't need to learn how to, you know, I don't need to experiment with this time signature. I don't need to learn about chords and stuff. You know, it's like that's stagnant and that's old and ew. And it's musty. Like, these are not positive adjectives. It's just,
well, I mean, you fit into a generation that doesn't necessarily get hype that way. You know, millennial generation is going. You rarely hear stories of people saying, "I want to learn new things," or "I want to push myself. I want to do things. I'm never done learning." Those are not usually when we click on the Atlantic story about what's wrong with the millennial generation. Those are the things that pop out. You're a young kid at 20 years old. I mean, do you compare yourself to other artists in your generation? Do you mm-hmm. say, "Okay, I need to be the best of the lot that's coming out of here"?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think. I'm not meant to be the best. That's not my calling in life. That's not my position. That's a chance role. You know what I'm saying? That's for the Kanyes of the world. I'm not a Kanye. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just know that my story and my sound and my persona and me personally, I don't need to, that's not me. I'm not the forefront dude. You know what I mean? I'm, mm-hmm. back here in the cut with my, you know, my whatever, just kind of doing me. I think I want to be the best. I want to be the best me that I can be. I want to, like, just personally best myself. That's really all I care about. You know what I mean? As long as I keep getting better at making the music that I'm making, mm-hmm. I'm not really going to have a problem with this as my career. But I just want to be like, the best at what I can do, you know.
I mean, you're in an industry where there's a lot of. I mean, obviously, consumerism has created competitiveness or competition, right? I mean,
the capitalism.
Idea of,
has
yeah, like the idea of a billboard list or you know, a CD where your album ranks, things of that nature. That's all based on something else. Yeah. So, is it hard to keep grounded when you have all of those forces going against you, meaning they want more Kwaku, or they want you want to get on a bigger show, you want to do bigger things. Mm-hmm. You know, is it harder to go back to that sentiment of I can only, you know, be the best person I can be, mm-hmm. when all those forces around you are trying to get you to compete?
Nah, if anything, it pushes you closer to that sentiment, but it becomes less positive. You know what I mean? So when all these pressures are coming in, I need to elevate my career. You know what I'm saying? I need to make these moves. I need that new song. People want this new music. That just pushes me closer to, like, okay, well, I have this skill set and I have this mind and I have this voice and this is all I have to rely on. I don't have writers. I don't have, for the most part, like, I could hit up people to produce my music, but that's not how I make music. Like, in general, you know, so yeah. Even if I do have, like, a producer make a beat, even if Bohouse makes a beat for me, it's like, I'm, for the most part, I'm still locked in making my own music. And it's just like, when all those pressures come in, it really
hunkers you down, yeah.
Yeah. And it becomes like, all right, like, it's belly up to the bar time. You know what I mean? And
spoken like a true 20-year-old.
It's just gritty, man. You know what I mean?
Kwaku Collins in studio, the Evanston-based hip-hop artist, will be at Lollapalooza coming up on Thursday. Here's what we're going to do. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get our last track live here in Studio 435.
Cool.
Stay with us. It's a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Studio 435, wrapping up tonight with Kwaku Collins, the Evanston-based hip-hop artist. His album is Nat Love. He is in Studio 435 tonight because he will be at Lollapalooza on Thursday night, or Thursday day. He's going to be Wednesday night at K-Tronada opening for Kate Tornata at Concord Music Hall. That's sold out. A tremendous story of a 20-year-old who is going to be at Lollapalooza. This is a big show for him. But first, he's here in Studio 435. Let's get our last track tonight. It's a track called Lucky Ones. Boathouse is DJing, and we're ready to rock whenever you guys are ready. Kwaku Collins.
There's my name. The way it out. Let's get it. I like your shoes too. Those are cool. I really like those. I'm serious, dog. You can climb something in those. In a city of arms. Yeah, I missed the first line, but we were talking about shoes. The Velveteen Sun. Doing the running man. And from there, I evolved, yeah, as anyone does, who knows the other hand, yeah, yeah.
We're one of the lucky ones.
So I would have checked, wish I didn't lie, and with the privilege of speaking to you, under the pretense of which I have came out.
Of the lucky ones.
So I would've checked in his MIA, and so with the privilege of speaking to you. Shouts to the ones that help that get paid out. And we're one of the
lucky ones.
So I would've checked, put it in my name. Might mess around and put that on you. Under the circumstances of today,
we're one of the lucky ones.
So I would've checked in the good light. That being nothing I already said. That being something we feel every day. I heard tales of the motherland. I heard tales of the motherland. Yeah. Earth to the mothership.
We're one of the lucky ones.
So I would've checked where you been, yeah, yeah. I where they look at you differently, you. Seven cobblestone flights to the street, yeah.
We're one of the lucky ones.
So I would've checked in a good night, eh. Star would've stepped in a jump in a under the circumstances of today, oh.
We're one of the lucky ones.
So I would've checked with you on that way. Might mess around and put that on. Given the circumstances of today, oh.
Oh, start
with a check. I can't take no losses. Not with the way things are going now. Let it ring this time. Yeah. Where's that sign on the thing? Yeah, where's that sign?
It's in the window.
Oh, they got it. The window. Cool. Damn, they flicking me up right now.
What brought me here?
Kwaku Collins in studio tonight on the download here. Studio 435. Kwaku Collins will be at Lollapalooza coming up on Thursday.
Yeah.
That's right. And he will also be opening for Kate Tornata at Concord Music Hall on Wednesday, but that show is sold out.
Yeah.
Kwaku's album is called Nat Love. You can find it on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, all the different places. Also on the great record labeled Closed Sessions here in Chicago. Kwaku, thanks so much for coming in, man. I really appreciate it. Great to see you again.
Good to see you.
And congrats on your success, and we'd love to have you back when you got the next Lollapalooza. When you're on the next stage in front of hundreds of thousands of people, just remember us here at The Download. We appreciate it.
Of course.
All right. That's going to do it tonight here on The Download. Tomorrow night, we got a great show. The guys from VH1's Black Ink Chicago, the tattoo artists who are down in Pilsen, are going to be in studio, which I'm looking forward to that. Also, Julie Smolansky will be our guest at Download in Chicago Business. She, of course, the CEO of Lifeway, does the kefir, the yogurt. She will be in studio as well. So we got a big show tomorrow.